From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Big Brown is bearing down on the outside. Halfway in front, Big Brown down the center of the track, coming with every stride and coming to win the Haskell.
Hunt in the white cap down at the rail is coming fast, maybe best of all. A late run from it's in the post, absolutely flying. Hunt gets the lead, it's in the post at the rail, coming like a rocket. Hunt gonna get there, Hunt has won it.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Here's Lady Eli, charging on the far outside. Antono sneaks through an opening at the fence. Kidora's fighting hard. Lady Eli comes at her from the outside. Antono comes at her from the rail. The three of them battle it out to the wire in the Diana. Here's the finish. It is the Dauntless Lady Eli.
It's American Pharoah with that majestic stride, pouring it on through the stretch. Keen Ice runs into second. American Pharoah, the party continues as he rolls home in the Haskell.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
If you're a horse racing fan and you're not pumped up at this time of year, I'm sorry. Check your pulse. Opening weekend at Saratoga and Del Mar, Haskell, Road to the Breeders' Cup. This weekend and this time of year is thoroughbred racing as it was meant to be, to steal an old Keeneland slogan. Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, the show that launched this entire network. It's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. 112 days, 8 hours, 48 minutes. That's all that remains. And it sounds like a lot, but it'll be here before we know it, until the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Del Mar in November. And today, all eyes are going to be on Monmouth Park in New Jersey, this time for the racing product being offered and not a dispute over jockey whip rules. The Grade 1 Haskell is the lone Breeders' Cup Challenge race scheduled for today, the winner earning an all-expenses-paid trip to the Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar in November. Seven horses were entered on Wednesday, including some pretty big names that we all became familiar with as we made our way through the Triple Crown this spring. Hot Rod Charlie, first and foremost, from the barn of trainer Doug O'Neill, made the 6-5 morning line favorite. Derby runner-up Mandaloon, second choice at 2-1. And Preakness, second-place finisher, Midnight Bourbon, 9-2 on the morning line. That makes him fourth choice in the wagering behind Late Bloomer Following C. Now, that is not a name we've become familiar with. Following C, owned by Spendthrift Farm, was given, in my opinion anyway, an inordinate amount of respect by the morning line odds maker Brad Thomas. He's third choice in today's Haskell. At 3-1, it is his stakes debut, not his graded stakes debut. His stakes debut. Now, he looks like he could be very, very talented. It certainly appears to be. He's won a couple races in a row and comes out of that allowance win, did it nicely, the way he'd like to see. But putting him ahead of a horse like Midnight Bourbon, who has proven that he can compete at this level, is a bit curious, in my opinion, but we'll see if that holds up as we get closer to post time. Post time for today's Haskell is set for 5:47 Eastern, and you're going to hear from NBC announcer and TVG analyst Larry Colmus coming up in just a little bit. He's going to join me at 8:15 Eastern after our first commercial break. Larry called the Haskell for more than 20 years when he worked at Monmouth, and today he will be on camera with the team at TVG with their Haskell coverage. So looking forward to that and the visit and talking some Haskell with my friend Larry Colmus. I'm also going to talk a little bit of Hot Rod Charlie for you later in the show with trainer Doug O'Neill. That will come your way in the final segment of today's program as I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup at 10:40 Eastern Time. So Haskell stakes conversation bookending today's show. In between, Blood Horse's Byron King will join me at 8:35 to update you on the latest involving the situation with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert and the New York Racing Association. Byron had the story on Blood Horse earlier this week that a judge has ruled that Bob Baffert was not provided due process prior to his essentially being ruled off Naira tracks after the Kentucky Derby. Byron will tell me, and he will tell you, what all of that means going forward for Baffert and for Naira, and even potentially Churchill Downs, who also said that Bob would not be allowed to run horses there after what happened in the Kentucky Derby. Again, that comes your way at 8:35. 9 o'clock, I'm going to preview the upcoming Colonial Downs meet with Vice President of Racing Operations Jill Byrne. That meet, which figures to be extremely strong, especially considering the fact that Churchill Downs closed their barn area for the summer because of a new turf course that is being installed. That move by Churchill has forced many trainers who would normally stay there for the summer season to move to other tracks, including Virginia. The opening day card, which is set for this Monday, attracted 111 entries for the 9-race, well, I guess it's an 11-race program now. 111 entries. Pretty solid. Not a bad way to start the Colonial Downs meet. This past week, you may have caught this, not on the racing side, but on the sales side of things. Fasig Tipton, boy, what a job they did. Proudly welcome back buyers and consigners to the Fasig Tipton sales grounds here in Lexington for what proved to be an extremely encouraging July sale. It was really, really good. Their attention is now going to turn to the 100th edition of the Saratoga sale, August 9th and 10th. That July sale, by the way, kicks off the yearling sales season in our industry. So it was important. It's an important barometer to see what might be ahead for consigners and for buyers moving throughout the rest of 2021 as we start looking toward that Saratoga sale and the Keeneland sale that comes up in September. These are big moments, but that July sale kind of sets the scene and it gives us a first glimpse as to what we might be looking at. Fasig Tipton President and CEO Boyd Browning Jr. will be with me at 9:25 Eastern to talk about both of those sales, the July sale and look ahead to the Saratoga sale. And he'll give you an idea and his opinion of just where things appear to stand with the yearling sales market at this point here in the year. We're also going to go in the room with Sean Clancy coming up at 10 o'clock and join Kurt Becker to take a weekly stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland at 10:25 Eastern Time. Is that enough to get you pumped up here this morning? I hope so, because it is going to be one heck of a fast-moving show. And we are going to cover a lot of ground, talk about a lot of different storylines, and, of course, get you ready for the big races coming up later today. Poll question for this morning. This should be interesting. Who is the best 3-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year? Who is the best 3-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year? Give you 4 choices. If you want to chime in with another one, you can feel free to comment. Essential Quality, Rombauer, Medina Spirit, or Hot Rod Charlie. So we'll give you the 3 Triple Crown race winners with Essential Quality, the Belmont winner, Rombauer, the Preakness winner, Medina Spirit, the Derby winner, and then Hot Rod Charlie, who has been right there knocking on the door and proved tough as nails, finishing behind Essential Quality in that Belmont Stakes. So who is the best 3-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year? Essential Quality, Rombauer, Medina Spirit, or Hot Rod Charlie? You can go to our Twitter page, at HRRN, to cast your vote. You can also do that on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, if you like us on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, that's cool. Email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts as to the best 3-year-old in the country as we kick off the second half of the season. All right, very busy show. It all begins with Larry Colmus when I return. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Belayed Stakes for fillies and mares on Saturday and the Grade 2 Connaught Cup on Sunday. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're edging up the Holy Bull now, but Mike Smith might let them edge up. He's in front by a half length. Meadow Flight is all out. Joe Bravo goes to the whip. Holy Bull's got more left at the quarter pole. 111 and 2 for three quarters. They're turning for home in the half pole, and Holy Bull has not been let loose yet. He's still on top. Meadow Flight running a game race, but Holy Bull is now set down in the final furlong, and Holy Bull is in front by two. Meadow Flight has run his all, but Holy Bull is too good, and Holy Bull wins the Heschel. It's Meadow Flight second, and Concern came from off the pace to run third.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Larry Colmus, 27 years ago, his very first Haskell call. It came with the great Holy Bull in 1994. What a way to kick off a career at Monmouth, by calling the Haskell that year with Holy Bull. He came back the following year and had the brilliant filly Serena's Song in his second Haskell call. Not a bad way to start. And Larry is with me now here on HRRN. Larry, good morning. Happy Haskell Day.
Good morning, Mike. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. And looking back at Holy Bull, I mean, not only was that 27 years ago, but I was 27 years old. So it's actually half a lifetime away from when that happened. And we've seen a lot of great stuff since then. But I think you and I are in agreement that there's no one quite like Holy Bull. He was something special.
I referenced at the top of the show that you called every Haskell at Monmouth for more than 20 years. How many years was it, Larry?
22. I called 22. Exactly 20 years as the announcer at Monmouth Park. And then for 2 years after that, I called it for NBC. So a total of 22 years, starting with Holy Bull and ending with American Pharoah. That's a pretty good Haskell sandwich right there.
Wow, fantastic. You know, you took the reins from announcer Bob Weems, who had called races at Monmouth for more than two decades. And I loved the way the transition took place in 1994. Tell me that story.
That story was opening day, 1994. Bob Weems was right next to me in the announcer's booth. And when the horses came onto the track for the first race, Bob announced them onto the track as he had for the last 20-something years. And after that, he turned over the mic to me, and that was it. I called the first race, and Bob was a frequent visitor to the press box after that. He would come up and come and hang out in the announcer's booth, and a really cool guy who was a legend around these parts, having called so many years at Monmouth. But we eventually got it done.
So often in the world of sports, we hear athletes talk about coming in and replacing a legend. Like, you never want to be the quarterback that has to follow Tom Brady, for example, right? Or let me stick with the Steeler theme, Ben Roethlisberger for a minute. You never want to be that next guy in line that has to follow them because the expectations are so high. Was it like that for you with a legend like Bob Weems?
Well, yeah. I mean, he had been doing it for so long, you know, and he was in the fabric of Monmouth Park, and, you know, everybody was so used to hearing him, and anytime there's a new voice, I mean, I've had to do that with Bob Weems, Jim Hannon when I took over from him at Suffolk Downs, Tom Durkin, of course, at NYRA, and last year at Del Mar with Trevor, at least for 1 year. So following legends is something I'm kind of used to, and you know, it is a difficult thing to do, but you just have to do the job the best you can.
I love the story about your second Haskell with the brilliant Philly Serena's song. What do you remember about that day?
Hello?
Lawrence, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
You're here. Larry Colmus with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I think I lost you for a second there. I love the story about your second Haskell with Serena's song. Tell me that story.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, Mike. It was something that scared me for a while. I'll remember it very well. It was the 1995 Haskell, and Serena's song was taking on the boys, and you know, was expected to win. Gary Stevens was riding her, and I remember saying, you know, around between the eighth pole and the 16th pole, I was giving her the winning call, and I remember I said it's going to be the filly over the boys. And at that point, I remember she just, her tail went right up and she just stopped. And here came Pyramid Peak with a rush on the outside, and Serena's song barely held on. And I remember in the call, I said, Pyramid Peak gave her a scare late. And I forget who came up to me. He's like, no, Pyramid Peak gave you a scare late.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, those are things that people that are watching, they don't realize, right? When you're calling the race and there's a situation that happens and you go out on a limb, things can change very quickly. You found that out in 1995, but it happens, you know, it happens. And luckily you were on the right side of the coin that day.
Yeah, you have to be prepared for anything. And that was something, that over time you need races like that, like a mucho macho man will take charge photo in the Breeders' Cup Classic that lost about 10 years off my life waiting for the result of that. It teaches you a lesson after a while. You know, maybe don't go quite too much out on a limb.
You will be prepared this afternoon in a different way when you will sit down alongside Caton Bradar and the team at TVG to bring folks coverage of the Haskell Stakes. Tell me about your role later today, a little different role for you, Larry.
Yeah, it's something we just started this year. I've been working for TVG at Monmouth Park, and it's been a lot of fun to come back here because I live here at the Jersey Shore, so it's an easy about 8-minute commute over to Monmouth Park. But sitting down and being an analyst and talking about the races and telling stories about Monmouth Park and past Haskells and things of that nature. It's a little bit different than calling races, but I've grown to like it, and we'll be doing that today. I'll be working with Caton, Gabby Gaudet, and Mike Joyce, covering all of those big races, including the Haskell and many races on the undercard that we'll have a chance to show and talk about. It's a terrific card of racing.
Well, you certainly know this from being associated with Monmouth and Haskell Day for so many years. This is a fantastic card. Forget about just the Haskell. You look at today's program, 6 stakes races. 5 of those are graded stakes, including 2 grade ones with the United Nations, which is race 11, and the race which will follow that, the Haskell, is race number 12. The entire program, Larry, just it's one hit after another.
Yeah, it really is an exciting card, and I think it's a really good idea to bunch all these races together because you get the top jockeys here and all that. You've not only got those two grade ones, you've got the Matchmaker, the Molly Pitcher, the Monmouth Cup. I mean, it's full of graded stakes action and really competitive races too. Don't see a lot of heavy favorites among these stakes races, which makes it even more exciting. And I think we'll have an outstanding card, and hopefully the weather will cooperate. There's a little chance of thunderstorms, but we're hoping that they stay away.
Let's talk about the Haskell for a minute. It attracted a field of seven, and this is a race, much like the Jim Dandy at Saratoga, that typically horses will use to begin the second half of their seasons. And the horses that we became familiar with through the road to the Triple Crown and the Triple Crown races, you have the same thing here in the Haskell, as is typical with every Haskell Invitational. You get some horses that we saw in the Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont. Hot Rod Charlie comes in. You have Mandaloon, who was runner-up in the Kentucky Derby and won the Pegasus at Monmouth in his most recent Midnight Bourbon for Steve Asmussen. Share your thoughts on this year's field.
Well, you do have, you know, those three who everybody's familiar with. I mean, you saw them all come down the stretch in the Kentucky Derby. Mandaloon and Hot Rod Charlie were right next to each other, right alongside of Medina Spirit. And Midnight Bourbon, obviously, is a very, very talented horse. And now you're going to add the new shooter factor to all this, as they like to call them, Following C, who is a three-for-three lifetime horse for trainer Todd Pletcher, who started his career with Bob Baffert out in California and made his way to the East Coast. And a lot of people are talking about him. He's the most likely front runner in the race. But, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a really, really exciting Haskell.
You had the added advantage of calling all three Triple Crown races with NBC. So you got to see many of these horses up close and personal and study them and really go inside those three Triple Crown races. Hot Rod Charlie, man, I know he's the 6-5 morning line favorite in the Haskell, but man, he is one gutsy little horse, isn't he?
He's tough. His race in the Belmont Stakes was amazing. I mean, the fractions that were being set for a mile and a half, and he just kept on rolling, and only Essential Quality was able to come and get them, and they just blew everybody else's doors off. I mean, it was a spectacular race. And, of course, his Kentucky Derby and, you know, all the races leading up, he really has kept improving and improving. You know, as a two-year-old, I don't even remember calling him. He was running at Del Mar on the turf. You know, it was like these two-year-old grass races. And, like, Hot Rod Charlie ran in those races? And all of a sudden now, you know, he's become a new horse on dirt. I'm really impressed with what I've seen from him. But this race isn't that easy. It's going to be it's a tough horse to take 6-5 on.
Yeah, and Brad Cox sends out Mandaloon, who was runner up in the Kentucky Derby, just a half length behind Medina Spirit, came back and won the Pegasus on June 13th at Monmouth. That's the local prep race for the Haskell. Mm-hmm. He's a horse because of the fact, I think, that Brad Cox does have Belmont winner Essential Quality in his barn. I think Mandaloon kind of gets overlooked a little bit sometimes and doesn't necessarily get the respect that he deserves. But, Larry, he's 4-for-7 lifetime. He's a grade 2 winner. What's wrong with Mandaloon?
Nothing. His yeah. Performance in the Kentucky Derby was fantastic. The only shock in the Derby was his odds. He was like 29-1 in there. Despite the fact that everyone on the backstretch was talking about how great he was training up to the race, that all I kept hearing Derby week, Mandaloon, and he almost gets the job done. He maybe eventually will in the Kentucky Derby, but he was he ran such a great race. Now, I was at Monmouth Park for the Pegasus, working for TVG. I had a chance to see that race. It was a learning experience for both him and for Florent Giroux, because here at Monmouth Park, you're not allowed to use the crop at all. And a lot of these jockeys are used to using the crop or the whip, whatever you want to call it, to get your horses to run, you know, faster and inspire them to go. And you're not allowed to do that here at Monmouth Park with new rules from the New Jersey Racing Commission. So Florent Giroux got a test run in the Pegasus, and Mandaloon did start to drift out through the stretch, and and he sort of waited on horses and got a little tired there at the end. So, you know, you think that was a good learning experience for him. The one thing I will say is one of my favorite angles in these big races is horses that are pointed to that race well in advance. And from the time that Mandaloon ran in the Kentucky Derby, they knew that Haskell was next for him, and they were just going to get to the Haskell with one race, the Pegasus, leading up. And I love horses that are planned for a specific race well in advance, and Mandaloon is the absolute top case of that. And in fact, since the Pegasus, he didn't leave. He's been here at Monmouth Park, and that certainly is a big edge where Hot Rod Charlie had to fly all the way across the country. Of course, I've been told Hot Rod Charlie likes to fly, and it doesn't bother him at all. So there's always that to consider, too.
A couple of fantastic points. Visiting with Larry Comas, who will be part of the TVG broadcast team later today, bringing you coverage of the Haskell Stakes. I keep wanting to say Haskell Invitational, but Haskell Stakes, the proper way to say it now.
Right.
Yeah. Larry, yep, you bring
no
up
no longer call it an invitational. It's you know, they changed the rules a little bit to get in, and it's come up with a very good field.
You bring up a great point about the fact that jockeys are not allowed to use the whip at Monmouth Park. That has been a controversial decision. I know a lot of riders have boycotted the meet, all those types of things. We've talked about it here on the program many times. Have you, from an outsider's perspective, just watching the races, have you noticed a difference at all in the way that races are run or the horses that are winning? Has anything stood out to you that's different from what we would typically see at Monmouth?
Surprisingly, no. I have not really noticed it. And just watching the races, you don't really notice the fact that these horses, you know, are not feeling the whip. It may look different a little bit at first, but I think you kind of get used to it. I saw a story where Todd Pletcher was sitting with his son, who is not really a big racing person, but they were watching a race from Monmouth. And he says, "Tell me if you see anything different in this race." And his son's like, "No, it looked like a regular race to me." And, you know, that's an example of the fact that you really can't tell that the jockeys aren't using the crop. So, and I don't think that the races have changed as far as an advantage to front runners or closers. I just think, you know, it could affect individual horses that are used to it, and also jockeys that are certainly used to using it. So, you know, that it'll be like, Florent Giroux, who's been here, but Flavien Prat has not ridden at this meet. Joel Rosario hasn't ridden at this meet, and they're going to have to deal with those new rules, you know, in the Haskell and in the undercard races.
Just about a minute and a half before I have to get to the next commercial break, Larry, but the race before the Haskell is a race that I know you must have enjoyed calling all those years, the Mile and Three-Eighths United Nations Grade 1, another good renewal this year, too.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, the United Nations and the Matchmaker earlier in the card are two mainstay races left over from the Atlantic City Racecourse meets. The United Nations used to be called the Caesars, and before that it was called the United Nations at Atlantic City. But it's been at Monmouth for a while now, and this race is a strong 10-horse field. Of course, when you're talking about turf races, Chad Brown's got to be involved, and he's got a few of them in here, but a lot of the talk, and rightfully so, is about Arklow, who's this 8-5 morning line favorite who drew the rail under Florent Giroux. Question is a mile and three-eighths maybe too short for Arklow? He seems to like a mile and a half more, and in this race last year he was 6-5 and was fourth, beaten more than five lengths. So, you know, he is certainly no cinch in this field.
Larry Comas, ladies and gentlemen. Larry, listen, appreciate the visit this morning. Happy Haskell Day. I know this is a day that's special for you. Enjoy the coverage on TVG and being part of that team. I know we'll enjoy watching. And all the best later today, my friend.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Larry Comas here on HRRN. And what a day it's going to be at Monmouth Park in Oceanport, New Jersey. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to the situation involving Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert and the judge's decision that maybe will surprise you a little bit. That came out earlier this week. We'll talk to Byron King from Bloodhorse when I return. But first, it's time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every single Saturday by the Lexus store of Lexington.
There have been match races and there have been match races in thoroughbred racing. Some have fizzled, some have turned into classic confrontations of the equine sport. On October 20th, 1923, there was one that by anybody's measure or means falls into the latter category. At that date in the Roaring Twenties at Belmont Park, 50,000 patrons were amassed neath a brilliant yellow sun on a mild autumn day, with Mother Nature having reached down with tender tendrils to paint the surrounding countryside in the brilliant hues of the season to see a horse race. Oh, there had been large crowds at Belmont in the past, but never of the size of the assemblage gathered on that day. This one came filled with patriotism and the sporting instinct. It was an event amongst events. The enormous crowd was overflowed from the clubhouse into the grandstand and on out across the lawn, and provided the exclamation point to one of the greatest spectacles in all the annals of sport. The purse was $100,000, the racing surface muddy, and the combatants were the great Zeb, Harry F. Sinclair's American Standard Bearer, to be piloted by the redoubtable Earl Sandy, and the superb British representative Papyrus, with Steve Donahue handling the line. Zeb went postered at 4-5, Papyrus even money. Papyrus had several excellent workouts since arriving in America. Zeb had not been at his best of late, having incurred a skin ailment, but on this day, in this race, they both performed like the champions that they were. From a standing start, Papyrus got away very quickly, jumping on out to a length and a half lead before the two had gone a single furlong. Zeb, slow to settle into stride, made up the ground quickly and dropped down along the rail under Sandy. By the time they had gone a quarter, Zeb had gained the lead and was full of run. Sandy took a strong hold and was rating his mount nicely. At the half-mile marker, it was Zeb by a length, and on down the backside they went in the 10-furlong race, with Donahue on Papyrus, asking his stalwart for just a bit more, while Sandy, in turn, let out a notch on Zeb, holding on to a one-length lead as the two thundered into the far turn. They continued to hold their positions in what had become a cat-and-mouse game between riders and horses on around the turn, with Donahue and Papyrus unable to close any ground. It looked at that point as if the courageous British champion was indeed a beaten horse. As they swung off the turn to the head of the stretch, Zeb increased his margin under the astute handling of Sandy. Bending low, Sandy appeared to cluck and whisper something into Zeb's ear, and he began to widen his margin as a huge roar swelled up from the vast multitude in attendance. Zeb literally ate up huge chunks of ground with giant strides. Papyrus fell further behind. They had only a furlong to the wire, and it was Zeb by four open lengths. As they galloped to the finish with Zeb in full command, sending sprays of mud up before the noisy crowd, Sandy guided the conquering hero home magnificently with every leap, ultimately winning by eight open lengths. It was a stirring performance by Zeb, and the single most crushing defeat ever suffered by the British great Papyrus. The rancocous colt of Harry Sinclair had not run a particularly fast race, but under the handy guy named Sandy, he had proved himself to be an international champion and had upheld the honor and prestige of American racing. Zeb versus Papyrus, Belmont Park, October 20th, 1923. A great moment in racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. When a horse is galloping, only a single leg touches the ground at once. In this moment, the entire weight of the horse is supported by a single leg with huge downward forces. This makes the fetlock drop to where the pastern is in an almost horizontal position to the ground. For more Flair Facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they come to the top of the stretch, it is Arrowgate and Mike Smith. Oh, they've opened up a six-length lead here with 1 furlong to run. They've left the field railing behind. American Freedom and Gunrunner are 5 behind Arrowgate. What a commanding performance. He won the Travers by 12. Oh, what a race he ran today. American Freedom was second. Gunrunner was third. And Giftbox was fourth. In a final time of 1 minute 59.36 seconds, the fastest Travers ever, and a new track record.
Larry Comas with the call of that 2016 running of the Midsummer Derby. It was indeed Arrowgate for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, sizzling to victory that day. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Bob Baffert, after what happened in this year's Kentucky Derby when Medina Spirit was essentially ruled off of running horses anywhere in New York, any NYRA racetrack, New York Racing Association track, so Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga, this past week a judge said, wait a minute, not so fast, my friend, in the words of Lee Corso, and there's a chance that we could see Bob running horses again, potentially the ruling going in his favor, at least initially here. And the man who had the story on Blood Horse and has been covering this all along is Byron King, and he's with me now here on HRRN. Byron, good morning. All right, I guess we'll get to Byron here in just a minute. We must have lost him. We'll reconnect with Byron King and have him back on. Yeah, that interesting stuff when you think about it. The judge ruling that Bob Baffert was not granted due process in the NYRA decision of saying, hey, you're barred. They didn't give him the opportunity to state his case. They just barred him. Byron King is apparently reconnected. Let's welcome Byron again. Byron, good morning. Nope, I guess he's not. We will get to Byron here momentarily as soon as we have him back on the line. Yeah, so you know, you think about what this decision could mean. And I'm sure that there will be many more layers that Byron will lay out as soon as we get him on the line here. But what could it mean to Churchill Downs in their case? Because they turned around and virtually did the same thing that NYRA did and said, that's it. You know, we're investigating this and you can't run your horses here at Churchill Downs. I wonder if there are some similarities in the legal decisions that are going to be made in this particular case. We'll see. Byron's also going to take a look at the Grade 1 Diana, which is the race on opening weekend of the Saratoga meet later today, the signature race, if you will. There are other stakes races, certainly, but the Diana is the big one. Later in the program, you're going to hear from trainer Chad Brown. He's going to be with me coming up at 9:40 Eastern. Chad has dominated the Diana in recent years, so we'll get a chance to talk to Chad coming up at 9:40. Apparently some issues with Byron King's phone line, so we are efforting Byron at this time, and it looks like we have him back on the line. Byron, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I apologize. I was having some Bluetooth issues, so technology, man, throws me a loop occasionally.
Yeah, believe me, I'm one of those guys that says, get me back to a landline and an answering machine. I'll return your call when I get home.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I was a little bit rocking out a little bit too much to the tunes last night on my walk and forgot to turn off the old Bluetooth. But anyway, here we are, man. We're at it.
What were you listening to last night? What's your favorite thing to rock out to when you're walking?
I think last night was some kind of beach tunes, a little bit of reggae, I think, was in there. It was I was looking for a little something uplifting, so there you go.
Nice. Yeah, I usually turn to a little Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart, when I need something like
that. Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, but I'm an 80s hair band kind of guy, so that's that's going to be it for me. So I was just outlining some of the details. And you can do it far better than I can, I'm sure, because you've been covering this story with Blood Horse all along. But the situation that occurred this week, the decision by the judge saying that Bob Baffert was not granted due process by NYRA before they made the decision to bar his horses from racing at any of their racetracks after what happened in the Derby. So take it from there, Byron, and lay things out for people with the latest.
Right. So what happened was, is they were, Baffert was given a preliminary injunction. The judge ruled that the trainer had suffered irrefutable harm and been denied due process. That's kind of the irrefutable harm is kind of the basis that legal speak for granting something like this. And in terms of the due process, he did not have a hearing before he was either banned by NYRA nor subsequently. NYRA had argued in court that it needed to act quickly because it wanted to protect the integrity of its races, particularly the Belmont Stakes. But the judge found issue with the fact that he had not had a hearing even after the fact. So now the judge did rule in terms of something that NYRA was appreciative of is they did, the judge did rule that they have the ability to make a consideration on their own of the, of people that it could choose to bar for certain reasons and whatnot. So, essentially what this seemed to come down to for the most part based on the judge's ruling was due process. Was he treated fairly? Did he have his day to, you know, dispute the claims they had against him? And so that's kind of where the judge left it.
Yeah, so considering the fact that the judge ruled that NYRA does have the right to make these decisions on their own, in order for Bob Baffert to be able to run there, they still have the authority to say you can't run horses here, but I guess from what you're telling me, in order to do that, they first have to grant him this, the due process, you know, type of thing, let that play out, right?
Yeah, I would think that unless they do that, they could run into further issues with the court. So clearly what they, I would think, if they were to do this kind of action in the view of the judge, they would need to have a hearing and some kind of opportunity for Baffert to defend himself. Now, obviously, in all these cases, just to go backpedal just a little bit, these were all individual. This NYRA was exercising its own rights as a track owner, track operator, not a suspension handed down by a regulator such as the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, which has not yet ruled on the case. So obviously these things can get delayed when they're dealing with regulators, and it can get tied up for months on end, as we're seeing here, because there has not been yet an official ruling. So it will be interesting to see how this shakes out. I had asked the lawyer for Bob Baffert, Craig Robertson, what this means going forward, and he did not have a definitive answer, because some of it will depend on the legal steps that each entity could take. You know, NYRA could continue to contest this decision, or they may not. If NYRA takes a future step, then Baffert's attorney may as well. So this could clear the way for him to start, or if things continue to go down the legal road, it could be dragged out longer. So we'll just have to keep our eyes peeled to see what happens, and for that matter, to see what happens with not only the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission decision that most people would expect would be coming in the weeks or months ahead, but also Churchill Downs, which barred Baffert from running at its racetracks for a period of time going into, at least a couple years going forward.
Yeah, does the decision by the judge in New York set the precedent for what we could see happen with Churchill Downs as litigation continues there?
I think it somewhat helps this case. It is a different situation, though, slightly. So, for example, one of the things the judge focused on is the NYRA's ties as a state entity. It views the judge viewed NYRA as at least having some state backing and support, to where state run organizations have to behave by a certain set of rules and criteria. Among that is due process, right? So Churchill is not state run, so obviously it's a publicly owned company, and so that could be a different situation. Also, when many tracks are doing this these days, and Churchill Downs, for example, does, and where a trainer will sign an agreement prior to running and getting stalls at the track. And if they violate that agreement, part of those rules are that, essentially that the track can take action against them. And obviously an infraction that happened in the Kentucky Derby happened at Churchill Downs, happened on, track grounds. So Churchill may have more of a right to exclude, say, than Belmont, or I should say NYRA, where, this did not specifically occur. So we shall see. I would say this ruling helps Baffert a little bit toward his issues with Churchill Downs, but it's not exactly as if it's the an apples-to-apples comparison.
And based on the comments that you referenced from his attorney, Craig Robertson, it sounds to me like it's anybody's guess whether we'll see Bob Baffert running horses at this upcoming Saratoga meet.
Yeah, I would tend to think that if I had to guess, I would say, and I think that's all we can kind of do right now, because some things aren't really entirely in focus in terms of what they go forward with legally. But I haven't lost once before in court. Perhaps we may see a different situation for NYRA. I'm not quite sure how they are going to proceed, but I would not rule out the fact that we could see him running. I don't think Baffert has a whole lot of horses specifically for Saratoga's meet. He does a horse like Gamine, however, a champion female sprinter. There is really not a grade one on the West Coast for her to run, at least going sprinting. So I think a race like the Ballerina or something might hold appeal to run Gamine there. So I think certainly Baffert would probably like to participate in at least a select number of races at Saratoga this summer. And I think, one of the things that his lawyer also claimed is, Baffert lost a couple horses Country Grammar, who he was training on the West Coast, who won a, you know, greatest stakes out there, has now been sent to Todd Fletcher at Saratoga. Obviously Baffert at least had this ruling held up, would not have been able to run that horse at Saratoga. So these are considerations that his lawyer put forth in the his successful bid to get this injunction.
Still plenty of things yet to be determined, and seems like more questions than answers, but this was certainly one situation, one aspect of the Bob Baffert story that at least had some type of conclusion to it, at least only temporarily. Talking with Byron King from Blood Horse here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Byron, just a couple of minutes left before I have to get to another commercial break, but I did want to ask you about today's feature race at Saratoga, the Grade 1 Diana, or I guess maybe we just start calling it the Chad Brown Invitational. He has a couple more in here trying to continue his hot streak with the Diana. Tell me a little bit more about this particular race.
Well, it's amazing the success he's had in this race over the years, but, you know, he is so loaded usually year after year in the older Philly Ameriturf division, and he is again this year, but this is going to be a hard one, I think. I mean, he certainly has two nice horses in it. Probably the more well-supported of the two will be Lamista, who ran a really fine second in the Bogey in a paceless race. But she doesn't like tower over these by any means. She's 5-2. She was beaten by Harvey's Little Goyle in the Bogey. I kind of think Harvey's Little Goyle is going to be pretty tough in this particular spot. She ran in the New York Stakes during Belmont Week, and it just poured before the race. And it was a rare off-the-board performance for her. But typically, she's very consistent. 1-2-3, she won the Queen Elizabeth last year at this distance for Belmont. She won the Bogey. She's tactical, and I think she's going to work out a really good trip, and that would be Harvey's Little Goyle.
All right, Byron King with the Blood Horse. Fantastic as always. Byron, I really appreciate the visit. We'll encourage people to go to bloodhorse.com to read all of your different articles that you publish, not just on Bob Baffert, but on other things with racing too, and follow you on Twitter at @BH_BKing. That's Byron King with Blood Horse. Appreciate the visit, my friend, and enjoy opening weekend at the Spa.
You as well, man. It's going to be exciting times this weekend with Saratoga and Del Mar.
Yeah, fantastic. I said at the top of the show, if you can't get excited this weekend, check your pulse. I mean, this is fantastic. Haskell, too, down on the Jersey Shore. Just a fantastic time to be a horse racing fan. All right, when I come back, we're going to get you ready to bet the races today with today's first bet and then look ahead to hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again. So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit getvaccineanswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. It is time now to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's first bet, brought to you every Saturday at this time by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's first bet.
And it comes in race 8 at Saratoga, a post time of 5:03 Eastern. Number 7, Witzel, 8-1 on the morning line, has a 27% win projection from First Bet, a big number in a 12-horse field, rates 14 points higher than the next closest competitor, ranks top 3 in 6 of the 8 most important First Bet handicapping factors for this race, and today marks the second start for the 13-length debut winner at Tampa Bay Downs back in December, the first appearance for trainer Chad Brown and jockey Irad Ortiz Jr., and with Bo Liam in this field taking some attention, the price could hold. Number 7, Witzel, in today's 8th race at Saratoga, is today's first bet, and I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you haven't done it yet, make sure you check out the new outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. I have spent my entire life pursuing a couple of passions: horse racing, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the outdoors. And if you're into hunting, fishing, whatever it might be, you have to go see them. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. It's in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, so you can talk horse racing while you're in there too. But they have everything you need to hunt deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more, even two indoor archery ranges. Stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, second hour, hour 2 of 3 coming up, and it's going to be busy. Jill Byrne from Colonial Downs kicks it off to look ahead to their meet. Boyd Browning, the president of Fasig Tipton and CEO, he'll be here to look back on the July sale and ahead to the Saratoga sale. Trainer Chad Brown scheduled to be with me at 9:40 Eastern Time. That's an hour two. Hour three begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy, his one-on-one visit with veteran jockey Mike Luzzi. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history coming up at 10:25. And at 10:40, we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Doug O'Neill. Really looking forward to that one, and talking a little Hot Rod Charlie with the Haskell coming up later today. Busy show. Stay with me right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm going to pause 10 seconds for station identification. I'll be back. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. The first of 20 Grade 1 stakes will be run later on today up at the old Spa as the Diana for fillies and mares. At a mile and an eighth has a couple of familiar faces in there in trainer Chad Brown and John Velasquez. Each have won six runnings of the Diana. Chad Brown as a trainer, John Velasquez as a Hall of Fame rider, and actually teamed up twice in the last 3 years with the one and only sister Charlie to take down the two runnings in 2018 and 2019. Chad Brown will take two chances at today's Diana with Pocket Square, who has John Velasquez aboard, and one of the favorites in the race, Lemista. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back, Hour 2 of 3 on the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the show that launched this network. Happy to have you back with me. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, on this Saturday morning, Haskell Day, opening weekend of Saratoga, opening weekend of Del Mar. Yeah, not much more you need to get you excited than those words right there. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. My interview with Larry Colmus talking Haskell. My interview with Byron King from the Blood Horse talking about the latest developments in the situation surrounding Bob Baffert and the New York Racing Association. Go back and listen at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcast information. Poll question for today. I think this is going to end up being interesting. I know my vote. I think I go essential quality in this one. But the poll question for today is, which three-year-old is the best in the country as we begin the second half of the year? Essential quality, Rombauer, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie. Those are the four choices. You may have somebody else you think. Maybe you think it's Midnight Bourbon. I don't know. I don't see how Midnight Bourbon really throws his hat into the ring, because you're talking about essential quality, the Belmont winner, juvenile champion. But put aside what he did at two. As we stand here today on July 17th, who is the best three-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year? I think it's essential quality. I think he's been the most consistent throughout the year. Now, Rombauer's had a nice campaign, too. You heard Michael McCarthy on the program last Saturday, and he talked about the fact that they considered running him in the Haskell today, but they decided to stay out west and wait for another opportunity because of the fact that jockeys are not allowed to use the whip at Monmouth. That's been highly publicized. And here's one instance where the trainer feels as if Rombauer is a horse that needs a little encouragement from time to time during the race. And he thinks his best opportunities are going to come out west. So you have essential quality. You have the Preakness winner, Rombauer. And the Derby winner, Medina Spirit, who has been very quiet, hasn't been working at all. There was speculation that maybe we would see Medina Spirit return in the Haskell. But that's obviously not going to happen now. And now with what happened with the judge's decision in New York, would there be a chance to see Medina Spirit in the Travers Stakes at the end of August? Probably not. If Medina Spirit isn't working at this point, I think that's a long shot. But Medina Spirit, one of the choices. And then Hot Rod Charlie, who, as we know, is game and tenacious and gutsy. A horse that always seems to show up and run his race. 6-5 morning line favorite in today's Haskell. So who is the best three-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year. Essential Quality, Rombauer, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie. I want to hear from you, HRN Nation. So go to our Twitter feed at HRRN, Horse Racing Radio Network, if you follow us and like us on Facebook. And, of course, if you don't do any of that and you're not a social media person, I get it. Go ahead and email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts on that particular question. A lot of things still to come. We mentioned Jill Byrne. We are efforting Jill now. Looking forward to visiting with her, talking about the Colonial Downs meet, which will begin on Monday. Boyd Browning going to be with me at 9:20 to talk about the yearling sales scene and look back on that Fasig Tipton July sale, which was highly encouraging. Chad Brown going to be with me at 9:40. I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history as they apply to this weekend. And we'll go in the room with Sean Clancy coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern time. He visits with veteran jockey Mike Luzzi. Should be fantastic. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history and road to the Breeders' Cup with Doug O'Neill at 10:40, the final segment of today's program. So a lot of things coming up, a lot of things to get to for you on a loaded Equine Forum show. How excited are you for this weekend? This is, I mean, like I say, just the words, opening day, opening weekend, Saratoga, opening weekend, Del Mar, they get you pumped up. I stole the phrase from Keeneland at the open of the show. It is thoroughbred racing as it was meant to be. Remember Keeneland? Racing as it was meant to be, right? Thoroughbred racing as it was meant to be. That's what this weekend really is. Saratoga, Del Mar, you got the Haskell, road to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, come on, what more could you ask for? Well, I guess you could ask for racing at Colonial Downs. That'll happen on Monday. You have to wait until Monday, but it's going to happen. And I'm joined now by Jill Byrne, who is indeed the Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial. Jill, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's so exciting hearing talking about Saratoga, Del Mar, the Haskell, and then, you know, get through the weekend, and you got Colonial Downs to look forward to for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, I know, Jill, that you're fired up about opening day at Colonial Downs, and rightfully so, but as a racing fan, when you think about this time of year, it really doesn't get any better, does it?
No, I love it. You know, obviously you've got the Derby season. That's always exciting, the build-up to Kentucky Derby, and then everybody kind of takes a little bit of a deep breath after that. And now, I mean, this is full-on the best of the best all the way across the country from West Coast to East and everywhere in between, and the build-up now. You know, the Breeders' Cup, and with Breeders' Cup back at Del Mar, fans back at the track, it's just like we all went through this, you know, this torture last year, and just seeing everybody yesterday at Saratoga back there cheering horses on, we can't wait to have fans back here at Colonial.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic, and I know the horsemen are certainly responding to Colonial. You know, you and the team have just done a fantastic job of I won't call it resurrecting that program, but I guess it kind of is, and bringing things and continuing to move things in the right direction. 111 horses entered into the opening day card on Monday. That's fantastic.
Yeah, kudos to our racing office team, Allison DeLuca, the racing secretary, and all of her staff, Shane Burke, our stakes coordinator. Yeah, it's a great day of racing. But as you know, Mike, you know, we're offering 500,000 minimum a day in purses. So we got 700,000 on Monday with stakes races. And, you know, it's just a beautiful, you've been here, beautiful turf course. The dirt track is phenomenal, raving. Everybody just raving about the dirt track as well. So between offering big money and great surfaces and a really nice facility with an incredible team, you know, all the good things are coming together, and it showed with the support of the horsemen on Monday's entries. Tuesday's entries were very strong as well. Another couple 14-horse fields there. And so we're really excited and hopefully can keep up the pace.
You know, Jill, we talk about it a lot, that turf course is world-class, and you mentioned the dirt racing surface, and I know that you and the team spend a lot of time making sure that those surfaces are as good as we see in thoroughbred racing. And we can talk about it, and we say it on the program a lot, but what things do you hear from horsemen when they come to Colonial Downs and they run their horses and work their horses over those surfaces? What types of things do you hear from them?
Oh, well, that's what's great, because word of mouth. I mean, I can shout it from the rooftops that, you know, we have two of the greatest surfaces in the country, but it's the horsemen and the riders out there that are your, you know, the true. It's like people, you know, eating the chef's food. The chef can tell you how great a cookie is, but it's the people eating the food that are going to be the ones that, you know, make the decisions of whether it's that good or not. And having all these new outfits here this year from Kentucky specifically, you know, word of mouth was out there from some of the other trainers that have been here the last couple of years of how great the dirt track is for training and for racing on. And it really is just phenomenal. But then to hear, you know, Dallas Stewart, Michelle Lovell, Mike Tomlinson, Brett Calhoun, John Ortiz, you know, their riders here working on the track and just, you know, saying this track is great. You know, it's got such a great cushion to it. And then we had Turf Works on Wednesday and the same thing, riders just coming back raving over, you know, working on the turf course. So that's your true test, is the people that are out there on horseback and the trainers that are getting the horses back in the barn and seeing how good they are. So safety first, and knock on wood that everything remains that way. But actually, when you were calling me earlier to get on the show, I apologize for being late. I was meeting with my track superintendent, Ken Brown, and just going through our daily meeting, how everything is, and that's what we do.
Yeah, it's a team effort, and that's one thing that I noticed immediately when we made our first visit there in 2019 to broadcast the Virginia Derby. We'll be back again. I guess it's just over a month from right now. We'll be back at Colonial Downs for our exclusive radio coverage. Looking forward to that. But that's one thing I noticed, Jill, is that everybody, it's so many moving parts, but everything seems to fit together somehow. And you don't see that at every single racetrack.
No, you know, and again, I'm blessed with a great team of people at all levels here, and Colonial Downs Group and Peninsula Pacific Entertainment, you know, our owners just giving the support for us to be able to put on, you know, great race meet, and understanding that safety is priority number one for everyone, for the horses, for the riders, for fans, and letting me, you know, work from there with safety first and supporting me with the ability to do that. No, it's fantastic. As you mentioned, you'll see everybody doing everything. I think you probably saw me carrying ice buckets and hosing horses off on Derby Day in 2019. And, you know, you do what you have to, especially just having so many horsemen on our teams, on our track crew, and on our racing staff. That's where it comes from first, horsemen first.
Visiting with Jill Byrne, who is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial Downs. Opening day coming up on Monday, and it's a really strong card. And you've got, a quartet of stakes races on that opening day program too, right?
We do, yeah. All the stakes on the turf, Virginia bred, Virginia certified stakes. But to see some of the, you know, horsemen and trainers supporting those races that you wouldn't necessarily think of with, you know, the Virginia bred and certified horses. So horsemen from, you know, all over the country supporting those races. And then, you know, Dallas Stewart came in here with 21 horses, and he's got Chess Chief entered in the Bird Allen, who won the New Orleans Classic this winter down at the fairgrounds. Again, a testament to the racing office and to the reputation of our Secretariat Turf Course and the dirt track here, that people are confident that, you know, they're going to have a great, safe surface to race over, and see some of the riders that are named as well. So really looking forward to it this year, and just, you know, hoping Mother Nature is kind to us, but we can't control her. So we'll just do the best we can to make sure everything goes as planned. But I think by so far looking at the entries and the interest, it's really exciting this time of year.
We've mentioned a couple of times the horsemen that are coming from Kentucky, and the fact that Churchill has closed their barn area this summer to install a new turf course there at Churchill Downs has certainly not hurt the cause for other racetracks, including Colonial Downs. Jill, do you see this as something that can be built upon and the momentum can continue even in years to come? And what I mean by that is trainers that normally would just ship in for a race or two from Churchill Downs are now stabling at Colonial this meet. Do you think that there's a chance that they just fall in love with it the way so many people have, and you see them coming back year after year after year now?
Well, yes. I mean, and that's certainly what we're hoping, and all indications so far with just the short period of time that, you know, a lot of these trainers have been stabled here, all of the feedback is very positive, and they know, you know, that we're doing our best, and they know that we're going to, you know, do our best to take care of them and provide them again, you know, with safe surface, good racing, quality backstretch. So I do think, you know, that that will, when the next year comes around, and they don't necessarily have to leave, but now they'll be like, oh, wow, you know, hopefully that they had a great time at Colonial. Their horses did well. It was a good experience. And the money's great. So, you know, they'll come back. And that's what we want from everybody, whether they're from Kentucky or, you know, California, Louisiana, Maryland. It doesn't matter where they're from. We want them to have a good experience, do well, and come back, because we are rebuilding. We're new. We're, you know, only 2 years into this, and rebuilding that product and reputation out there. But so far, I think it's been a good one. And again, you know, it's all the people that I have here on the team. You know, when you've got the best in the business coming here to put on a race meet, I think that gives horsemen all over the country a great deal of confidence of track management.
Opening on a Monday is, in my opinion, a brilliant idea, because you're going to be the major signal. You're going to be the big show in town, the big fish, if you will. And there are going to be so many people that are tuned in right now that are going to want to make some wagers on the races on Monday. What types of wagering opportunities can folks expect throughout the meet, Jill?
Well, you know, pick fours, pick fives, the usual, you know, normal wagering opportunities out there. I think the pick fives, pick fours are always very popular, because it's usually, you know, an all turf, and you have full fields, which makes those, you know, very kind of fun to play. So, you know, the usual kind of suspects there of wagering opportunities. But what I guess does help and make a difference when you can get these full fields, and that doesn't mean every single race day is going to be like this, but you know, we hope so with the purse structure and the variety that we're offering. So I think for the wagering people out there in simulcast land, or whether here at Colonial, there's just such a great opportunity to hit big and to play some fun racing with some full fields. And I think for a lot of the wagers too, you're going to see a lot of recognizable names and faces and horses, because of, you know, the Kentucky group, the Florida group, the Maryland group, New York people shipping as well. It's more of a mix of horses and people that they recognize that they wager on.
Going to be a fantastic meet. It builds to a crescendo as we move toward the Virginia Derby, which is on Tuesday, August 31st. We'll be there to bring you that exclusive coast-to-coast worldwide radio coverage here on HRRN, and very proud to be able to do that. Jill, appreciate the visit, and enjoy opening day, enjoy the meet, and keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you so much, and appreciate all your support as well. And I look forward to, you know, everybody out there being able to watch and wager on our races, and hopefully make it to Colonial, New Kent, and enjoy a day out at the races now that fans can all come back and experience the greatest sport played outdoors, right?
Yeah, that's welcome news. Great stuff. Jill Byrne here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, just fantastic, and they do a wonderful job. And if you haven't been, really, it's one of those stops that you just need to make. It was my first trip to Colonial in 2019, and we thoroughly enjoyed it, and really looking forward to getting back later this summer. That's a busy weekend, by the way. Scheduled to be at the Charlestown Classic in West Virginia on Friday, August 27th. We'll bring you that coverage on Friday evening, then the Traverse Stakes on Saturday, and then the Virginia Derby the following Tuesday, August 31st. So a busy few days for us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and looking forward to bringing you all that coverage. Going to get to a break. We'll come back and turn our attention to the yearling sales as I visit with Boyd Browning, the president and CEO of Fasig Tipton. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series just means more.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
It means more competition.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
It means more at stake.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
It means more to owners.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
It means win and you are in.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and You're In Series.
Worldwide races. Win one and earn an automatic paid entry to the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
With $31 million in purses and awards on the line.
If we're considering two different races, and one was a win and you're in, and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
This is the series you can't afford to miss. This is the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, Win and You're In.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, taking a look at all the great racing coming up across the country. Been doing that for you throughout the morning. Larry Colmus was with me in the first segment of the program talking about the Haskell. Byron King from Blood Horse was here to update you on the situation involving Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert and the New York Racing Association. You just heard from Jill Byrne from Colonial Downs. And now we turn our attention to the yearling sales scene and Boyd Browning, who is the president and CEO of Fasig Tipton. They just wrapped up a highly encouraging and very successful July sale here in Lexington, Kentucky this past week. They now turn their attention to the 100th renewal of the Saratoga sale in early August, and Boyd is with me now. Boyd, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Doing very well. How are you after that fantastic July sale?
Very, very, very encouraged, very pleased for Fasig Tipton, for our customers, and also for the industry. It was a great kickoff to the yearling sale season, and should provide a lot of encouragement and excitement and confidence to all the participants in the marketplace.
How great was it to be able to welcome everybody back to Fasig Tipton here in Lexington?
It was just, you know, there were smiles all around. I think that it was almost like kind of like a homecoming event. People had a lot of folks you hadn't seen for 12 to 18 months. It was very nice to be able to shake hands and to see the smiles on people's faces and to get reacclimated and reacquainted and so forth. So it was the whole atmosphere was very, very good from the time horses got on the grounds until the last horse went into the sales ring.
Yeah, the July sale, it kind of kicks off the yearling sales season. And I mentioned the Saratoga sale. We'll talk about that here in a minute, Boyd. But what do you take away from a positive July sale that gives you the confidence that the rest of the year could go according to plan, or at least up to what you hope it will be?
Well, I think we even saw, I mean, the excitement, energy, strong results and interest at the two-year-old sales, particularly as the year progressed or the calendar progressed earlier this year. So there was a sense of optimism coming into the yearling sale based upon that. There's also just a sense of optimism. You know, you if you travel anywhere, the airports now they're bustling with activity. The restaurants are bustling with activity kind of around the country. You know, people are re-energized and are re-engaging. So, you know, we had a pretty good idea that the things were going to be active and strong in July, and that was certainly the case. And the thing that was the most encouraging about the July sale results was the widespread distribution of the buyers. There was not one group that kind of came in and made the sale, or you had to have one particular buyer on your horse to be able to have a successful sale. Widespread participation, lots of different groups buying, some new faces buying. So it was a really, really overall encouraging indication for the rest of the yearling season.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask you about some of the key signs that you, as the president and CEO of a sales company like Fasig Tipton, will look for to give you that confidence going forward, whether it's average, median. But interesting comments about the diversity and the disbursement of different buyers that were there. I think that's a really good take on that, Boyd.
Well, it's a sign of a healthy marketplace. You know, we've seen years when, and it's been a little while, when, you know, so you could post some just staggering sales results in terms of average prices and the top end of the market, what horses would bring. But in those days, you were really kind of relying upon two or three or four, you know, just gigantic groups with buying power that would lock horns and, you know, some spectacular results could happen. But that wasn't really... it was great if you happen to have one of those three or four horses that the Titans lined up on, but it didn't really help everybody throughout the industry or at all levels. And that's what was encouraging in July, is that there was literally participation at all levels. If so-and-so wasn't on your horse, there might have been six or seven other groups that were bidding on your horse. The vetting activity before the sale was very, very high. So it's, you know, and let's face it, I mean, we're, you know, the world, the economic condition of the world right now, no predictions or political statements of where it's going to be, you know, 10 years from now because of some things that we're doing, but there's a lot of cash in the market. There's a lot of people who have enjoyed significant appreciation in the value of their investments and their portfolios, and they didn't really have an opportunity to do some things that they love to do the last 18 months. So it's nice to have kind of a tailwind from the economic perspective that's kind of helping as well, rather than a tailwind's always better than a headwind, and we certainly feel that we've got a little bit of tailwind with the worldwide economy right now as well.
It certainly doesn't hurt. You know, the other thing that was great to see last week was the return of the Freshman Sire Showcase. Why is that so important, Boyd?
Well, we're serving the market. I mean, it's really plain and simple. You know, we had the Freshman Sire Showcase. We actually had what we called the New Sire Showcase for several years, which featured first and second crop sires. And then when the market went through some transition and some changes, you know, in the 2010-2011 period, there was a flight from unproven to proven in the thoroughbred industry and just like really in all asset categories. So people, the quote-unquote unproven sires and new sires fell out of favor a little bit commercially. And we had seen the momentum shifting in recent years, due in part to the recovery of the market, but also the success of the progeny of young sires on the racetrack. So we felt like this was a really strong group of new sires that were entering the yearling sales marketplace in 2021. It was a concept that had been very well received, was very popular in the past, and, you know, it worked really well this week. It's a great opportunity for stallion owners and for breeders to showcase some horses that may not have the elite pedigrees, but are really good individuals, and that's what we are in July. We're individuals. We're looking for athletic. We're looking for precocious. We're looking for, you know, just so strong. You walk out of the stall and you say, man, that horse looks like it could be a runner. And whether it's by a $5,000 stallion or a, you know, $100,000 stallion, we're looking for athletes, and in July in particular.
Visiting with Boyd Browning, the president and CEO of Phasic Tipton, the July sale now in the rearview mirror. We turn our attention to the 100th anniversary, the 100th renewal of the Saratoga sale in Saratoga Springs, which is set to be held August 9th and 10th at the Humphrey S. Finney Sales Pavilion. Boyd, 210 selected yearlings cataloged. This is really a boutique premier who's who of yearlings, isn't it?
Well, we think it's an exceptional group of horses this year. We had great reception at the farms as we looked at horses this spring. It's going to be an event. It's a celebration. I think that, you know, we see that. I think Saratoga is going to be a celebration, you know, this whole meet. I mean, the anticipation and the excitement leading up to the opening of the race meet, the return of fans, the return of the sale. You know, last year was excruciating. It was painful. It was awful when we determined that we weren't going to be able to have the Saratoga sale in 2020 due to COVID. And I think that, you know, as painful as it was last year, I didn't realize, and I don't think a lot of people realize, is how much Saratoga means to them. It's part of our way of life. It's part of that summer. You know, you look forward to it almost all year long, and It's the atmosphere at Saratoga. It reinvigorates everybody in the industry because of the love, the excitement of the racing. It's the end game there. You get to see, you know, the best horses run daily. I mean, the depth and the quality of the card. You go back to the backside and you go to Oklahoma and you see, you know, those majestic horses and you see the best trainers in the world and the best owners of the world. But you mix into that the townspeople and the people that come to Saratoga because of their love of racing and their love of the horse. And I just can't – it's hard to contain my enthusiasm and my excitement this year more than ever because we weren't able to go last year. And I would never have realized how much I would have missed not being in Saratoga, and not just from the sales perspective, but – it's a way of life, and I can't wait to get back, and I know there's an awful lot of people that feel the same way as I do.
That catalog for the Saratoga sale is now available on the Fasig-Tipton website. You can go to FasigTipton.com to view all 210 selected yearlings cataloged to go under the gavel August 9th and 10th. And, Boyd, I have to commend you on the black and gold color scheme with the cover of that catalog this year. It looks great.
Well, thank you. It's a lovely catalog. I can take zero credit for it. Evan Ferraro and his folks designed it, and you know it just reflects, you know, I think beautifully what the tradition, the heritage, what Saratoga means. It's a beautiful catalog. The cover's exceptional, and even better, the inside's exceptional. And you know, Saratoga means a lot to all of us at Fasig-Tipton, and we put our heart and soul into trying to deliver the best product that we can and make sure that we provide the best service that we can and the right atmosphere. And it all goes hand in hand. You know, you want somebody to get that catalog and think, man, this is class and this is high quality. And I think we've at least accomplished that on the front end this year. And I'm pretty confident that when people come on the sales grounds, they're going to say, this is a first-class group of horses and a first-class catalog and hopefully a first-class operation that we're going to run.
Fasig-Tipton has always honored the past as well, and you've kind of referenced that a few times as we've been talking here this morning, but to commemorate the 100th Saratoga sale, the catalog this year includes a fold-out timeline that outlines major events in the Saratoga sale's history. Boyd, what are – and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but when you think about your – time at Fasig-Tipton and the Saratoga sales that you've had the privilege to attend, what are some of the highlights that immediately come to mind for you when you think about the Saratoga sale?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the canned answer would be that, you know, to have sold the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years in American Pharoah. But you really don't know that at the time. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, boy, if any of us had known that, we'd have put together a group to buy him, and we'd be sailing off in the Caribbean right now. You know, there's not one single sale that stands out. The thing I'm probably the proudest of during that period of time was, and I can't even tell you the year, Mike, but it was 15 years ago. Basically the whole town of Saratoga lost power. I mean, literally lost power. And within about 45 seconds to a minute, our backup generators had kicked on, and the sale continued. And it was one of those hot summer nights with thunderstorms going on. And it was literally there's a few pictures of some a flight flying over, and there was only like one thing lit up in the area of Saratoga, and it was the pavilion and the sales grounds. But we had an unbelievable sale that night, and it was really a tribute to the organizational preparedness. You know, like you think, why in the heck are we, you know, we spend all this money and go all this, you know, make these contingency plans. What if this happens or what if that happens? And we had one of those nights when what if happened, and yet the team, the staff, everybody executed, the consigners, everybody rolled up their sleeves, literally, because it got to be about 100 degrees in the pavilion. The buyers were sweating like hell. The consigners were sweating like hell. And horses were selling like crazy good. And it's kind of the resiliency. To me, it captures kind of the resiliency of our industry You kind of have like a little mini crisis, and, you know, what are we going to do? There's no power. Boom, boom, boom. The generators kick in, the lights come on. People's like, wow, we're going to continue the sale. And the buyers are like, well, we're here to buy horses, and the consigners are here. We're here to sell horses. And it, I hate to use the term, oh, it was an electric atmosphere because there was no electricity. But that was kind of one of those memories that I'll cherish because of the preparation and the ability to continue to get the job done despite adversity. And I think that sometimes, you know, to me, demonstrates the character of an organization is how do you deal with adversity. And that's one of the things that I'm really proud of. I mean, 2020, how our industry and particularly how our company dealt with adversity, and it's very rewarding. And but we sure hope we don't have to deal with any adversity in 2021, and we can have a great celebration of Saratoga. We can have a great celebration of an exceptional group of horses, and I hope we can, you know, make this literally the best sale that we've ever had at Saratoga in 2021. And if that's the case, then we're going to try to raise the bar in 2022 because, you know, people entrust their best horses with us. It's an awesome responsibility. It's when people give you their best, they give you their trust. It's an amazing opportunity. It's an amazing gift, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we fulfill our responsibilities to deliver the very best that we can.
Oh, Boyd, your story about the power outage 15 years ago certainly doesn't surprise me because I've gotten to know you and so many folks associated with that Fasig-Tipton team over the years, and there's nobody better. It doesn't surprise me one bit that the sale went off without a hitch and that things continued to excel and to progress that night. Fantastic stuff. This will be the return of the Saratoga sale again, August 9th and 10th. Last year, the first time the sale had not been held since World War II. Think about that. So this will be a celebration coming up in Saratoga Springs in early August. Make sure you're there. Boyd, appreciate the visit. Appreciate all the support here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We love being partnered with Fasig-Tipton, and all the best moving forward with Saratoga and beyond.
Well, thank you very much, and you know, we're excited, and anything we can do to help you in the process while you're there covering the sale and kind of reaching out to the folks who may not be able to be there in person but can sure kind of participate and live vicariously through Horse Racing Radio Network, we're excited and love being a part of it as well, Mike.
Keep the ball rolling, my friend. Boyd Browning here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, what a job they do. I mean, you talk about an organization that you want to do business with, right? If you're a consigner, I've had so many consigners tell me over the years, they love doing business at Fasig-Tipton. So many buyers will tell me, we love buying at Fasig-Tipton sales. No exception this year. The July sale, strong, encouraging, whatever word you want to use. Saratoga sale going to be off the charts good. August 9th and 10th, 210 selected yearlings. Make sure you're there. View the catalog at fasigtipton.com. When I come back, we'll turn our attention back to the spa and the racing at the spa as I visit with champion trainer Chad Brown. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Championship racing is at legendary Pimlico Racecourse. Watch and wager as Maryland's best compete in a Saturday Summer Stakes campaign worth nearly $1.5 million in purses. July 24th features the $200,000 Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup. July 31st features three match series stakes races worth $300,000. And August 21st is a salute to all things Maryland at the Maryland Pride Maryland Strong Celebration. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a regular post time of 12:40 p.m. Visit the track or catch the live stream at pimlico.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This week's report is all about a mare with a great mindset. Sav, a 5-year-old daughter of Big Screen, goes after her second added money title in Saturday's $100,000 Bel-Aid Stakes, a 6-furlong event on the Woodbine main track for Ontario-sired fillies and mares. 3-year-olds and up, the Bel-Aid has attracted 6 starters. Trained by Ricky Griffith for owner Stephen Duffield, Sav has compiled a record of 5-6-2 from 16 career starts. The Grey, who has never finished lower than 5th, won the 2019 running of Woodbine's La Prevaillante Stakes. Her trainer had this to say about the mare coming into today's race. Quote, Sav has a great mindset. Nothing really bothers her. My 8-year-old daughter could lead her around the barn. End quote. Bred in Ontario by Spring Farm, Sav burst out of the gate in impressive fashion, notching a 6.5-length victory at 4.5 panels on the Woodbine Tapita in her debut on June 3rd, 2018. She paid $25.80 for the win. After a fifth in her second start, the My Deer Stakes, Sav concluded her 2-year-old campaign with a runner-up effort in the Shady Well Stakes. In 2019, Sav went 3-3-1 from 8 starts and followed it up with a 1-2-1 mark from 4 starts last year, including a third in the Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes on September 26th. She kicked off her 2021 campaign with a fourth in a turf sprint at Gulfstream on May 30th. Her consistency is a 100%, said Griffith. She has a big heart and is a true racehorse. Over the years, we've tried to point her in the right races, and overall, it has worked out well for everyone around her. The Ballade is race 3 on Sunday's 11-race card. First post time is 1:10 p.m. Fans can also watch and wager on all the action via hpibet.com. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit woodbine.com. Or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Beta Bay now to the throat latch of unbridled humor as the field comes to the top of the stretch. Those two head-to-head for the lead. Zagora with a sweeping move there on the far outside. And farthest out into the track, it's Aviate. And they're coming into the final furlong. And it is Zagora who strikes the lead. Zagora and Beta Bay fighting her every step of the way down to the line. Here's Aruna, who's on the scene late. They're down to the line, and it goes to Zagora, who wins it by a length and a half. It was a photo for second there. A photo per second between Aruna and Beta Bay. Late on the scene, Mekong Melody.
Tom Durkin with the call. That was the 2011 running of the Grade 1 Diana and Zagora getting the victory under Javier Castellano that day. You think, okay, great. Zagora wins. What does it mean? Well, it was the first win in the race for trainer Chad Brown. Since that day in 2011, we're sitting here 10 years later, Chad, the all-time leading trainer in the history of the Diana, let's say that slow, the Diana, Chad has won the race 6 times now, more than any trainer in history. That win in 2011 with Zagora, he had to wait 5 years to get another one. Came in 2016 with DeCita. He has not lost since. Yeah, Chad has won each of the last 5 runnings of the day. Diana will have a chance to do that. Coming up again later this afternoon at Saratoga. And I'll talk to Chad coming up in just a few minutes. We are attempting to get him on the line now. It is a busy morning for him, so we appreciate the visit. Chad, by the way, fresh off of his 6th Belmont training title, won 32 races, captured his 6th consecutive trainer's title at Belmont with the spring-summer meet that opened on April 22nd, concluded last week. And look, I mean, we know Chad Brown, multiple Eclipse Award winner, fantastic trainer, learned from one of the best of all time in Bobby Frankel. He took those lessons he learned, and he's doing things the right way now. And we are trying to get a hold of, just got a text from Chad Brown. Saying that he is tied up with an owner at the moment, not going to be able to join us here this morning, so we certainly understand that. He told me when I asked him to join me on the program, he said, well, training hours can be tough, but let's shoot for 10:40, should be free by then. Obviously not, and when you have this type of operation that Chad Brown has, we certainly understand when these things come up. He did say he'll have to reschedule, which, by the way, I was all set to make Chad our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. So there you go, Chad. Take that. Now, we'll still make him the Industry Star of the Week. How about that? After winning 6 consecutive training titles at Belmont Park, Chad Brown, your Industry Star of the Week. And Stuart Morris, as so many of you know, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is absolutely your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. So, yeah, we'll catch up with Chad down the road. He did say he would be happy to reschedule. So we'll catch him and talk more with Chad Brown up the road. But you take a look at that Diana today. Mile and an eighth on the turf course. Obviously, I joked earlier that it should be the Chad Brown Invitational, considering the success that he's had, especially in recent years. It's much like we talked about with the Belmont Derby and the Belmont Oaks. You start to kind of get a sense of where the American turf horses rank with some of the Europeans. It's not like we have a huge European presence in this race today, but you have Altica, who is trained by Charlie Appleby, who is one for one since coming to the United States, won the Just a Game at Belmont on Belmont Day, June 5th. So we'll see 3-1 on the morning line. You have Lamista, who is trained by Chad Brown, one of a couple in here for Chad Brown. She began her career in Europe, came here, was second in the Bogey in her U.S. debut. That was back on May 8th. Summer Romance, another one for Charlie Appleby. Second behind stablemate Altica in that Just a Game Stakes at Belmont back on June 5th. She's going to get a lot of respect in here, too. That is her only start in the United States. And then you have Pocket Square for Chad Brown. Also began her career in Europe, has had two starts here, an allowance win, and a fifth place finish in the Just a Game. So Chad Brown versus Charlie Appleby. I think that's a fair way to look at this year's Diana. I think if anybody else wins, and you have some big names in here with Suge McGahee and Arno Delacour. But I think if anybody else were to walk away with the title other than Chad Brown or Charlie Appleby, you'd be a little bit surprised. Post time for the Diana today, 6:16 Eastern. All right, I'm going to get to another break. I'll come back and take a look at some memorable dates in racing history as they apply to today and tomorrow, then get you ready for hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
This place has a pulse. You hear it in the canopy, feel it in the ground. Life, fully illuminated, engulfs you. From the birds singing in the treetops above to the tiniest insects in the soil below, you take a deep, cleansing breath, filling your lungs with the essence of the forest. Now, imagine it's all gone. Healthy, life-giving forests reduced to nothing. No singing birds, no lush canopy, and water and food in short supply around the world. Time is running out to protect our forests, and without our love, they can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our forests. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Don't forget that you can follow HRRN and all of our talk shows many days during the week and all year long. It kicks off on Wednesday evenings. Actually, Wednesday afternoon, 3 to 6 Eastern, with our race day program presented by Twin Spires. That's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman take you through big racing all across the country for 3 hours every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon. On Wednesday evening at 6 Eastern, you can tune in to our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton as I visit for a full hour with a trainer to talk about their life and their career. Really some fascinating stories coming out of those shows. On Thursday, the Bristnet.com call-in show, your chance to call in and talk some racing with Anthony Stabile and Ed DeRosa. And on Friday, 6 Eastern, the Weekend Stakes preview. You can head back there now and listen to last night's show. It's available via podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net. Anthony and Bobby go through all of the big stakes races coming up over the weekend and tell you who they like and some of the inside scoops. So you can head over there and check out the Weekend Stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. At your leisure, but I encourage you to do so before you bet the races each and every week to get ready to make some wagers. So, thought it would be fun here to do a little bit of an extended look through racing history with some memorable dates that pertain to this particular weekend. And we start with July 17th, 1975. That was when jockey Lafitte Pinkei Jr. notched his 3,000th career victory aboard Lexington Lark at Hollywood Park. Upon his retirement, Lafitte's win total would stand at 9,530. Only one jockey in the history of our sport has won more races. Russell Bays, who hung up his tack after winning 12,842 races. He's still the leader by a long shot in that particular category. July 17th, 1994. Yeah, on this day in 94, former jockey Angel Cordero Jr. had his first stakes victory, not as a jockey, but as a trainer, when he sent Holy Mountain to win the Lexington Stakes at Belmont Park. Cordero was officiating on behalf of Holy Mountain's regular trainer, Bob Glaceris, who was serving a suspension at the time. Cordero, by the way, ranks ninth all-time among jockeys with 7,057 career wins. As a trainer, he saddled 688 horses, winning with 87 of those runners. Tomorrow, look at tomorrow. Those are the only dates that apply to today, historically anyway. Tomorrow, the 32-year anniversary of the last Northern Dancer foal to be sold at public auction, later named Northern Park, was purchased by Zenya Yoshida for $2.8 million. And in 30 starts over 4 years in France, Northern Park compiled a 4-7-4 record. It was on July 18th, 1993, that jockey Gary Stevens topped $100 million in purse earnings after winning the seventh race at Hollywood Park aboard Don't Presume, a British bred. Gary, now retired, would finish his career, how about this, with more than $258 million in purse earnings. That ranks him ninth all time. But that was a memorable day, topping 100 million July 18th, 1993. And those are the dates in racing history that apply to this particular weekend. It's fun to take a look at some of those each and every week. You know, you think about names like Lafitte Pinkai Jr. and Angel Cordero Jr. and Gary Steele. I mean, these are Northern Dancer. These are names that, you know, the minute you say them in racing circles, not outside of racing certainly, but in our industry, in racing circles, the minute you say them, people know exactly. I mean, these are household names in thoroughbred racing. So it's so cool to be able to look back on some of these days. And it kind of reminds you that, yes, Lafitte Pinkai Jr., today's the anniversary of him winning that 3,000th career victory, but career race. But Lafitte Pinkai Jr. wasn't always Hall of Famer Lafitte Pinkai Jr. He didn't get there overnight. You know, and it's so cool when some of these memorable moments and memorable dates apply to like a first win for a jockey or a first win for a trainer that is now in the Hall of Fame. And it just reminds you that everybody starts somewhere. You know, I tell the story on this show and on Trainer Talk a lot about Bill Mott and the fact that there was a time when he couldn't get stalls. I believe it was Centennial Park. It was a very small racetrack. But Bill was just getting started, the native of Mobridge, South Dakota. And he couldn't get stalls because, get this, his horses weren't good enough. Are you kidding me? And then years later, Bill Mott, and it wasn't that long afterwards, walks down his shed row and hears champion, champion, millionaire, millionaire, champion, millionaire. It's just incredible to think of, you know, and people like Bill Mott, like Lafitte. Lafitte, one of the most dedicated athletes in the history of sports. You remember that story that's often told about Lafitte keeping his weight intact and staying healthy. And I believe it was on a red eye going cross country. And he had one peanut. And he nursed that peanut the whole way on that flight. And that was all he ate. And it goes something like that. It just shows how dedicated Lafitte Pinkai Jr. and all of the individuals that reached the top levels had to be throughout their career to make it and to get to that level. Yeah, cool stuff. Want to remind you, too, that the Claiming Crown is coming up later this season in December. You won't want to miss the 2021 Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park with full fields, big purses, and great betting opportunities. It's presented by a partnership of the National HBPA, TOBA, Florida HBPA, and Gulfstream Park. We covered that race on radio for many years that day. It is the Breeders' Cup for the blue-collar horses. And it was always fun to do. For more information about how you can nominate your horse to the Claiming Crown this year, just go to claimingcrown.com. And you can also contact my good friend Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HBPA. He can take care of you, too, if you go to the HBPA website. But claimingcrown.com is where you can nominate for that day of racing. And it's always fantastic. The horses in our sport that don't often find themselves in the spotlight, the claimers, have a day to have a Breeders' Cup type of day and a series of races that fits them. It's pretty cool. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show thus far, and by the way, one more hour is still to come. I'm going to tell you about that momentarily. But if you missed my interview with NBC announcer and TVG analyst Larry Colmus in the beginning of the program at 8:15, he spent some time talking about the Haskell. He called the Haskell for more than 20 years. His first one in 1994 with Holy Bull. But he talked about this year's edition, too. He talked about the United Nations, which is the race before the Haskell later today. If you missed that interview, if you missed my interview with Byron King from the Blood Horse at 8:35, or Jill Byrne from Colonial Downs, or Boyd Browning just a few moments ago talking about the yearling sales scene, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this entire show. There will be interviews broken out on our homepage too, but the entire show will be there for you to listen to at your leisure. And so many of you, by the way, have taken the time to email me, to text me, to tell me in conversation about how much you're enjoying this extended 3-hour format of the Equine Forum. And trust me, we are still tweaking it. There are some new things coming that you are really, really going to love. Different ways to cover and present this great sport of thoroughbred racing. So make sure you stay tuned to our Twitter feed at HRRN. Like us on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, and sign up for our email newsletter, which we send out twice a week to stay up to date on everything happening with this show and all of our shows. You can sign up for free on our website, horseracingradio.net. All right, third hour of the program coming up. It begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy, Sean's one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week with jockey Mike Luzzi. Kurt Becker stroll through racing history at 10:25, and down the road to the Breeders' Cup we go with trainer Doug O'Neill talking a little Hot Rod Charlie at 10:40. That's all ahead right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Big Brown is bearing down on the outside. Halfway in front, Big Brown down the center of the track, coming with every stride and coming to win the Haskell.
Hunt in the white cap down at the rail is coming fast, maybe best of all. A late run from it's in the post, absolutely flying. Hunt gets the lead. It's in the post at the rail, coming like a rocket. Hunt gonna get there. Hunt has won it.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Here's Lady Eli, charging on the far outside. Antono sneaks through an opening at the fence. Kidora's fighting hard. Lady Eli comes at her from the outside. Antono comes at her from the rail. The three of them battle it out to the wire in the Diana. Here's the finish. It is the Dauntless Lady Eli.
It's American Pharoah with that majestic stride, pouring it on through the stretch. Keen Ice runs into second. American Pharoah, the party continues as he rolls home in the Haskell.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum, the show that launched a network, all presented by our friends at Woodbine Entertainment, rolling on. Again, a very busy morning. And I started the show after that open that our producer, Lee Delapina, put together, saying that if you're a horse racing fan and you're not pumped up at this time of year, you need to check your pulse. You really do. Because this is opening weekend of Saratoga, opening weekend of Del Mar. You have the Haskell, which continues the road to the Breeders' Cup. It's a weekend that is really thoroughbred racing as it was meant to be. And I steal that slogan, an old Keeneland slogan there. It is. That's what this weekend is all about. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. One more hour to go, and it's going to be a busy one as we continue to count down to the Breeders' Cup World Championships and talk about the Haskell Invitational. If you're wondering about the Breeders' Cup, now just 112 days, 6 hours, and 47 minutes until the event returns to Del Mar November 5th and 6th. Of course, we will be there to bring you exclusive radio coverage of every Breeders' Cup race. We've been doing it for you since 2007, and we are proud and privileged to do it again here in 2021. We'll be there throughout the week with our Breeders' Cup countdown shows. Those come your way on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of Breeders' Cup week, and then you'll hear every Breeders' Cup race live on radio with us and our team on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Well, this third hour is jam-packed. Each week, so many listeners have told me they look forward to Sean Clancy's In the Room segment. He goes in the room with a jockey, one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey conversation. And today, it's with veteran jockey Mike Luzzi, who we caught up with at Saratoga. And, you know, Mike Luzzi, one of those guys that, you know, he's always in the news for the right reasons, if you hear about Mike Luzzi. And he's been around a long time. And he's somebody that carries himself the right way. I love when he talks with those types of individuals. You have Kurt Becker stroll through racing history, again, coming up at 10:25. Those have been fantastic as Kurt takes a look back at a memorable name in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And then don't forget Doug O'Neill going to be with me at 10:40 to talk about Hot Rod Charlie, the morning line favorite in today's Haskell Invitational. And looking forward to that visit. You know, I was going to have Doug on before the Belmont and called an audible and had his nephew on the show. And many of you may remember that interview. So I spun Doug, as they say, for his nephew. But now I welcome Doug back to the program. And he's always more than happy to do it. He's a fantastic guy. And looking forward to talking about Hot Rod Charlie with him, who will have the services again of Flavian Pratt. The blinkers come off of Hot Rod Charlie today. That's interesting to me. Because in the three starts to begin his career, Hot Rod Charlie ran without blinkers. He finished fourth, third, and fifth, respectively, in those three outings. Now, in his defense, his first start was at 5 furlongs on the main track. His second start was at 5 furlongs on the turf. And his third start was 1 mile on the turf. But nonetheless, all three came without blinkers. And he was fourth, third, and fifth. Never really in contention. The blinkers went on October 2nd of last year at Santa Anita in a maiden race at 1 mile on the main track. And he wins. He gets up by a neck to win that day. Comes back. He's second at odds of 94-1 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He's third in his next race, the Robert B. Lewis. He wins the Louisiana Derby. Third in the Kentucky Derby. Second in the Belmont. All with blinkers. That's a pretty good resume. The blinkers come off. Going to ask Doug about that and the decision to do it, to make that move now. Why he would do that, considering the success that Hot Rod Charlie has had wearing the blinkers since last October. All right, all of that's still ahead. We begin hour number three, though, as we do every week. It's In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Mike Luzzi, veteran jockey on the New York circuit, riding around the golf cart at Saratoga with a pair of crutches. A little different, I guess.
The only thing is it's not my first time. I've missed three or four meets now being injured. So it's always disappointing. You look forward to Saratoga every year. You try to build your business up all year for Saratoga. I was doing okay at Belmont. I won some races, and I had a positive attitude. I felt like something good was getting ready to happen, and something bad happened. But it is what it is. That we're here, and we're plugging along.
Yeah, what's it like mentally not to be able to ride? I mean, to go from being an athlete riding and working at your craft to just being on the sidelines. It's got to be tough mentally.
It is. It's a mental struggle, and I've dealt with it before in the past, so I know a little more about it. But it's sitting on a sideline like any other sport. You know, nobody wants to sit on the bench. They kind of forget about you when you're hurt. And I think I've even told you this before. No one likes to see a hurt jockey. You know, they kind of put you in the closet and come out when you're not hurt anymore. But I always keep a positive attitude. I am a race tracker. I can't do anything else, you know. And my son's a jockey, and I've been around it all my life. So I don't know anything else to do but wake up at 5 in the morning and go to a racetrack.
Yeah, that's what you're doing now. I mean, riding around a golf cart, just kind of being on the racetrack, I guess, is important for you.
Absolutely. And I have clients I want to keep in touch with, and friends and family. So, you know, not to sit at home and lay in bed is just not what I do. And I like people. I'm a people person, and good conversation. And I think it keeps you healthy, and I think it helps you heal quicker.
Yeah, no doubt. Just to be out doing your routine, seeing people is a heck of a lot better than sitting at home. I once got hurt, and I was lying on the couch, and a guy called me and said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I'm going to just lie on this couch till I feel better."
And I've had to do that in the past where I wasn't mobile with crutches. And the, you know, my one injury I had a few years ago, I was immobile for the first 2 months, and I couldn't go to the racetrack. So, I mean, positive-wise, I'm on crutches. Hopefully not too much longer. It's been 3 weeks already. So just to get out, to be able to get out, I know is a good thing because of my past.
And what's it like watching your son Lane ride? I mean, he's doing well in Texas, and same thing, he got hurt. That had to be hard for the whole family, I guess.
I mean, I was on the couch in a cast and watching races, and I watch every race he rides. It's nerve-wracking, and I'm at at times, very proud at times, all the time, actually. And he took a pretty good crash, and I you know, I'm a jockey father as well as a jockey. And the only thing that's worse than that is my wife. My poor wife has got to watch me and my son. So it is what it is. He took a pretty good crash. He's 24 years old, and he's already on the Equisizer, you know, healing up. So he'll be back before me, I think.
And as a father, it's got to be difficult to watch your son. You've been through that and are going through that. It's got to be difficult. I mean, it's being a father is not easy, but then adding that element of risk and danger and things that you know, I guess it's got to add a whole nother element.
You know, and like I said, I'm his hero, you know, and everybody knows it, and I know it. But to watch him, fall, and it was a pretty bad one. And, you know, I took a fall 2 weeks before I got hurt, and it looked like the worst spill you ever seen, and nothing happened. So that little 10 minutes or whatever, 15 minutes of not knowing is tough, especially he was, you know, he's in the Midwest and I was in New York. And, you know, there's always that 5-10 minutes, and then his agent calls, he's up, he's walking around, he might have broke his collarbone, and it's a relief. And at the same time, I know it's going to be disappointing for him, and because he was winning a lot of races. And, you know, it's that moment of knowing he's okay, then I know he's going to be bummed out, you know. So it's an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, when do you talk to him? I mean, you must talk to him that night, I guess, and just what's that conversation like?
After the fall, I mean, we talk all the time after every one of his racing days. I wait till the end of the day. I don't want to be that father, and I've seen other father jockey situations where they're on him every race, and I didn't want to be that guy. But after the fall, it took a while. You know, the whole routine of going to the hospital, and he actually spent 2 days in the hospital. And I'm not knocking that hospital or Texas or anything like that. You know, he came here, we got him here, we got him an x-ray here, and he told the doctor that I all my friends are doctors and lawyers now after all these years, but my personal friend, Lane, went and seen and got the x-ray, and he says, Doc, you told me in 5 minutes what they couldn't tell me in Texas for 2 days. So that was nerve-wracking, but he just got a slight little crack in his collarbone. He'll be back shortly.
And Jockey's life, collarbone, that's, so when you hear that, you're like, oh, sweet, just a collarbone.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything, but yeah, that's usually a typical one. He actually broke his other one years ago in Florida, but this one wasn't so bad.
And you grew up a racetrack kid. I mean, growing up around Delaware Park, kind of similar to how I grew up. Did you ever want to be anything other than a jockey? Or was always going to be a jockey?
You know, I grew up in Delaware, and we probably were close in age and probably close in what was going on in the mid-80s. And I took a brief period, you know, as I turned old enough to ride, and I was told I wasn't allowed to ride till I finished high school. I took a year away from it, and sowed up the wild oats, and I did the high school thing. But after that, it was, I mean, the day after graduating from AI DuPont High School, I was at Delaware Park working for Ross Pierce and Buckland Farm and Jonathan Shepherd. So I there was a brief period where I fought it, but I didn't get away with it.
And no regrets. I mean, you've loved the game. You got riding in Maryland, then made it switch to New York. It's been a good ride, I'm sure.
It's been a good ride. You know, people are questioning, you know, when are you going to retire? What are you going to do? And someone asked me, is this it for you? And, you know, I feel good. I mean, age is different now. You know, there's guys still older than me. You know, they're having some more success. And Mike Smith and, you know, what's he's done in the last 4 or 5 years is just amazing. You know, the only thing about New York, I don't think they'll allow you to do that here. I've seen guys try to just ride the stake races and not successful. It's something about New York. They want you riding every day and all day and any kind of horses. That's the perfect situation to be in. I don't think New York will allow it to do that. But I'll come back from this injury, and I'll get right back in the saddle as soon as I can. And I feel I got some more good rides in me, and there's no signs of retirement. You know, ask my wife, she'll tell you different. But I still love it, and I still want to do it, and I'm still mad I'm sitting on the bench.
That's the way you have to look at it. I mean, you're still a competitor and still want to do it. And when your son, when did you start thinking, well, he's going to be a jockey? Is that early on? Is it really, you got that bug, or what was that like?
It was interesting because we had him in Catholic school on Long Island, and he was a hell of an athlete. He played every sport. He made the baseball team. He was 90 pounds, blah, blah, blah. And one day, riding home from school, 10th grade, he said, "Dad, you know I want to be a jockey, right?" And I said, "Oh, if you're serious, I'll help you and I'll guide you the best I can." And the journey started that day, because the next day we took him out of Catholic high school and put him in the public school, which was right across the street from Belmont. And he set up his schedule where his first class wasn't until 10 o'clock. So the next day we went to work with him, and he did a lot himself, I mean, which I did as well. And you can learn and be taught and be – I didn't push him. He wanted it, and he was there at 5 o'clock every day, and he still is.
Yeah, that's going to be proud, make you proud as a father and a jockey, right, that he has that work ethic and wants to do it the right way. I think that's important for you when he said he wanted to be a jockey. Okay, if you're serious, I'll help you.
Absolutely, and no 80%. You know, 120%, and that's what he gave, and he deserves everything he's done. He's got a bright future, but I'm also proud of him as a young man, because, you know, everywhere I go and everybody says, "Man, you did a great job, and your wife, and you guys did a great, he's a fine young man besides a good jockey," and I don't know how it happens. My wife and I, we try to mess it up, but we have two great kids, and my daughter's in college and university in Albany, and we got lucky, I think.
And watching him ride, what's that like? I mean, it's got to be as a jockey's perspective and a father's perspective, and you kind of balance the two?
It was very, very nerve-wracking at first, because, you know, I didn't know if he knew enough. I didn't know if he was ready, and I know I wasn't ready when I started, and you find out sometimes the hard way. He used to open up by 10 lengths. The first 30 horses he rode, if he ever made the lead, he'd open up by 10, and I'd get crazy. So the day he broke his maiden was at Laurel. I was in New York, and I just told him his horse had a shot. I'd handicap us. He said, "What do you think?" He used to send me the PPs. I already had looked at him the night before. I said, "Man, the horse, he's got a chance. Let's just do me a favor. Please don't open up by 10. All right, I can't take it. All right, Dad, so just make sure you're a half a length in front of the next horse." And he came out nice, but he hit the turn, and he opened up 5, 6, 7. And by the 8th pole, he was about 9 in front, and there was a horse coming. And the first time in my whole racetrack life, I was rooting for the wire to come. And I had never done it, even as myself. And he held on by it. By a nose. He stood up a little before the wire, and it was so nerve-wracking, but for him to win his first race. Then he, 5 races later, he rode the race of his life, so it was great. But it's nerve-wracking, but at the same time, very proud.
And you grew up with Buddy Raines, a great great old friend of my family and mentor to you. Do you ever have those moments where you're kind of talking to Lane like Buddy Raines, or giving him those lessons that he taught you?
Absolutely. One of the first lessons that came from my grandfather, I gave to Lane. I asked him, I said, "Lane, what do you think the hardest part about winning a horse race as a jockey?" And he said, "You know, saving ground and saving horse, and, you know, whipping left-handed or cropping left-handed. Now I got to be careful." And I said, "Nah, Lane, none of those." And then this comes from Buddy Raines. He said, "Getting a leg up. You know, getting on that right horse." And that was one of his first lessons, but that comes up a lot. And there's not a day that goes by I don't think about my grandfather, and, you know, especially up here. And, you know, John Rotz just passed away, old-time jockey. He rode my grandfather's horse in the Preakness in 1962. So that was another reminder of my grandfather. And there, some people remember him, but, there's a lot of young people at the racetrack now that kind of forgot about those guys. And it hurts your feelings a little bit, but time moves on, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, those guys taught you. They taught you the right way. I mean, it's old school, however you want to call it, right? I mean, it's just the old school, hard working and be a horseman and ply your trade the right way.
It really was. I think I timed it just right. I mean, I got a little taste of the old timers. I rode for Alan Jurgens and all these New York trainers, even the Maryland trainers. You know, Eddie Gaudette, everybody sees Gabby on TV and Lacey training now. I was there working for Eddie. Linda Gaudette was pregnant with Lacey. We were still galloping horses. She was, they were real racetrackers. You know, she was pregnant, but we had a set to get out. So it's interesting. The new generation is fun to watch, and like I said, I know Lacey and Gabby appreciate what their father did, and they probably think of him every day, just like I think about my grandfather. So there are some families still in the game, but there's new people that don't know Eddie Gaudette or Buddy Raines, and it hurts your feelings, and you don't want to push it on them. You don't want to be that old guy thinking about the good old days all the time, because they're living their good old days, so you don't want to interrupt that. So,
yeah, how's that song go? These are the good old days.
That's when you're living them. So I don't want to push the old timers on the younger generation. So it is what it is. They're living their good old days.
That's Mike Luzzi coming back as veteran jockey here with a broken leg, but he'll be back soon. We're at Railside here at Saratoga. It's nice to see you, and we look forward and rooting for you to come back.
Pleasure. And whoever's listening to this, I hope somebody's going to listen to this. Keep it up, man. Horse racing's the greatest game played outside.
That's Mike Luzzi.
I hope somebody's listening to this, too. I'm listening, Mike. Well done. My thanks to Mike Luzzi and to Sean Clancy for going in the room. You can catch that segment every single Saturday morning here on the Horse Racing Radio Network on the Equine Forum. If you missed any of them, Sean has sat down with Ramon Dominguez and Richie Migliori. There have been so many memorable visits. John Court, who we replayed last weekend for you. Head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and there's a whole podcast section devoted to the In the Room segments with Sean. So you can go back and binge listen to all the In the Room conversations. They have been fantastic. And my thanks to Sean and to Mike Luzzi for making this one possible on this Saturday morning. I'll be back to get you ready for the rest of the show right after this quick word from My Racehorse.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
All right, coming up next, it is Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. That's quickly become one of the favorite segments of so many of you out there on this Saturday morning. And then Road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Doug O'Neill to wrap up the show at 10:40 Eastern Time. I'm back right after these words. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Belayed Stakes for fillies and mares on Saturday and the Grade II Connaught Cup on Sunday. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
The Florida Derby, I would say, is the time that, for me and him, was his best moment for us. Because it was a great field, and he literally, put them away. And very easily, and that was probably the best moment I had with him.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. That was trainer Jim Ryerson, who appeared for a full hour with me on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton this past Wednesday, talking about the best horse that he has ever trained, Unbridled Song. And I asked him the question about his favorite Unbridled Song moment or memory, and he immediately took me through the progression leading up to the Florida Derby and said, what you just heard, the Florida Derby was that moment, his moment with Unbridled Song that always stands out to him. He would come back after the Florida Derby in 1996 and win the Wood Memorial. He would finish fifth in the Kentucky Derby. He ran with that bar shoe on that was a controversial decision, but ran his eyeballs out. Huge race from Unbridled Song, finishing fifth. Came back in the Peter Pan, was second, then the Arlington Citation Challenge, and then finished up his career with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito. And when I asked Jim Ryerson about that moment when Unbridled Song was taken away from him, a horse that meant so much to him and so much to his family, he gave me an answer that no trainer has given me when I've asked him a similar question in the past. He said, and you'll hear all of this when you go back and listen to the podcast, but he said, I think it was more difficult on my kids, on my wife and my family than it was for me. And I thought about that for a minute, and he continued, and he said, as a horse trainer, you're kind of like a coach, and you know if you're not winning, there's a chance you're going to get fired. And I thought it was a great analogy. And he said, but the ones that had the most difficult time getting through that decision to move Unbridled Song to Nick Zito were his kids and his wife and his family. They had become so attached to that horse, and it was the horse of a lifetime. It changed Jim Ryerson's life. He said it's the horse that put his kids through college. So it was very difficult on the family when that decision was made. But Ryerson handled it with absolute class. That analogy, that parallel to being a coach, I think is so true of what it's like to be a horse trainer. You know if you're not winning, there's a good chance you could be fired. Somebody else could get that horse. Hear the entire interview. Jim was so good. And it's an hour long. It's there as are all of our trainer talk shows on our website. Head over there, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. Quick update, the poll question this morning. And then I'll get you to Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, which, by the way, Unbridled Song certainly did his part to play a role in racing history, not just on the racetrack, but then as a really, really top stallion when he went to stud after his racing career was concluded. So I'll get you to that segment coming up in a minute. But poll question today, who is the top three-year-old in the country as we begin the second half of the year? Essential Quality, Ron Bauer, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie. Let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email the show. If you don't do social media, that's fine. Email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, well, it is time now, as we do every Saturday morning, to take a stroll through racing history with my good friend, Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. At Monmouth Park in Oceanport, New Jersey, the summer meet hits full stride today with the 54th running of the $1 Million Grade 1 Haskell Stakes for three-year-olds at a mile and an eighth. Such is the history of the Haskell that nine winners have used it as a springboard to honors as champion three-year-old colt, while Serena Song and Rachel Alexandra both won the race on the way to becoming Eclipse champion three-year-old filly. And of course, Rachel's win in 2009 was part of her Horse of the Year campaign. Rachel Alexandra, in fact, is one of five Haskell winners to be named Horse of the Year in the same season, the others being Holy Bull in 1994, Point Given in 2001, American Pharoah in 2015, and Authentic just last year. But our focus today is on the man for whom the race is named. Born in New York City in 1893, Amory Haskell led a charmed life. He played varsity hockey at Princeton and was a naval aviator in World War I. He would later become active in steeplechasing, flat racing, fox hunting, show horses, and would become a breeder of ribbon-winning hounds. As a businessman, Haskell rose to become vice president and general manager of exports for General Motors. He would later become president of the Triple X Safety Glass Company. But it was his fondness for horses which became the identifying trait of his private and public endeavors. In 1924, Haskell founded Woodland Farm in Middleton Township, New Jersey, at a time when men of great wealth often chose to be gentlemen farmers. The farm was described as a sprawling three-wing estate with extravagant features. Haskell shared the farm with his wife, Annette, who was the daughter of Standard Oil President Henry Morgan Tilford. By 1925, Woodland Farm had become home to lavish parties thrown by the Haskells, where it was said that guests would step through long glass doors of a solarium and onto a stone terrace for an evening of dancing. Combining his love of horses with his business acumen and capitalizing on the respect he commanded among his peers, Amory Haskell helped lead the effort to bring back top-level thoroughbred racing to northern New Jersey, just as America was emerging from World War II. The original Monmouth Park had closed in August of 1893, having suffered a reported $150,000 in operating losses that season. It had thus been over a half century since the pounding of thoroughbred hooves had been heard on the Jersey shore. But as Haskell looked at the situation in 1946, he believed the time was right to build a racetrack. The construction effort would be financed by the sale of stocks and bonds to the general public. The inaugural race meet would consist of 28 days, featuring two stakes races per week, one to be held on Wednesday, the other on Saturday. Opening day for the new Monmouth Park was set for June 10, 1946. But the grandstand roof wasn't finished, and neither was the five-story clubhouse. As a result, the opening was pushed back to June 19. As opening day arrived, some 800 thoroughbreds were stabled on the grounds. Another 80 found accommodations at nearby Brookdale Farm. Long lanes of sod were being laid. The final concrete was being poured. Tan bark was being tamped down in the paddock. A potential groom strike was averted only an hour before post time. Ultimately, some 19,000 fans would pass through the turnstiles that day, wagering $700,000, and the press would hail it as the revival of the Sport of Kings in northern New Jersey. One scribe wrote that Mother Nature had painted a beautiful backdrop, including a perfect panorama of trees and shrubbery. The columnist continued, saying, "Monmouth Park is like an artist's masterpiece, where the green of the trees meets the blue of the sky, but not before it is slightly tinted by the blue-green Atlantic Ocean." The writer concluded, "Old and historic Monmouth Park, that dates back to 1870, has been recast in a new and more beautiful setting." Amory Haskell oversaw it all, helping shepherd Monmouth Park through its opening. He would serve as the track's president until his death in 1966, with the race named in his honor being inaugurated 2 years later in 1968.
Today marks the 54th running of the Haskell Stakes, a Grade 1 win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic later this year at Del Mar. We remember Amory Haskell, who 75 years ago this summer helped make Monmouth Park become a reality. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, nobody weaves a story together like Kurt Becker. My thanks to Kurt for putting that piece together on this stroll through racing history. And my thanks to Lane's End and to Keeneland for making those segments possible for you each and every week here on the Equine Forum. All right, coming up next, we're going to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup, that segment presented by our friends at Breeders' Cup. The Breeders' Cup fast approaching. Doug O'Neill knows that better than anybody. He's won the Breeders' Cup on several occasions and looking for his first win in the Haskell later today with Hot Rod Charlie, who is 6-5 on the morning line. That is good for the morning line favorite role, and we'll see if he can take care of business when he goes to Oceanport, New Jersey later this afternoon. That's coming up next right here on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
And Dipping In will steal this one. Can you see it? Dipping In on top by Link.
Fastest in Queen Nakia. Here's the finish. Gibberish wins the treasure chest.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing is back at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Horsemen will love the big money offered during this year's meet with average purses of $500,000 per day. In addition, maidens will compete for $50,000 and stakes horses will benefit from a beefed up stakes schedule. Plus, owners are guaranteed at least $1,000 per start with trainers receiving a $300 per start bonus. It's all happening at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
It is Dr. Jeff now getting away. Dr. Jeff is in front by almost four lengths. Fort Ticonderoga in second, and Flip the Script is third. It is Dr. Jeff and Joel Rosario to win the Saturday opener here as the odds-on favorite.
Dr. Jeff, the two-year-old son of Darley Stallion Street Boss, made his debut, a winning one at Belmont last Saturday, earning a 78 buyer, an effort which makes him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss is the fastest son of the Great Street Cry. Dr. Jeff became the fifth two-year-old winner this year for Street Boss, who currently sits at number five on the two-year-old sire list. Learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
The Department of Veterans Affairs is so innovative, it not only improves the lives of veterans, it transforms the lives of healthcare professionals who serve them with access to the latest technologies and remarkable benefits. Transform your future at vacareers.va.gov.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And the field turns for home. It's Penny Hughes on the inside, First Samurai on the outside, and Stevie Wonderboy closing in on him with one furlong to go. Penny Hughes in front. Edgar Prado pleading for just one more furlong on the outside. Stevie Wonderboy, and he's giving his all. A 16th from home. Penny Hughes, Stevie. And this is Merv Griffin's sunshine of his life. He's got a two-year-old champion in Stevie Wonderboy.
The always brilliant Tom Durkin with the call of the 2005 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Stevie Wonderboy with the victory that day for trainer Doug O'Neill. It was the first Breeders' Cup win for Doug. It came 16 years ago. He would go on to saddle four more winners since that win by Stevie Wonderboy. Four more Breeders' Cup winners. And today looks to add a Haskell Stakes to his resume with the ultra-talented Hot Rod Charlie. Gonna welcome Doug as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
And with that, I officially welcome trainer Doug O'Neill. Doug, happy Haskell Day.
Oh, thank you. I was so excited about today and very optimistic. We're going to see a good run from Charlie.
Looking forward to seeing him strut his stuff. Let's just start for a minute. We'll talk about Hot Rod Charlie, but let's start with that look back, that call that we just heard from Stevie Wonderboy and Tom Durking having fun with that call. Go back to 2005. What was that moment like for Doug O'Neill?
Oh, it was incredible, especially for the late Merv Griffin, who was such a successful entertainer and businessman, and to be, you know, partners with him on a great horse like that was incredible. And Stevie Wonderboy was just exceptionally talented, and unfortunately his career was cut short due to injury. But yeah, that was quite a great look back, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. Those are great times.
Yeah, you came back the following year with Thor's Echo and then Merrifield in 2007. Those horses, you think about where your career is today, and you think back on where you were back then. You had some really good horses back then, my friend.
No, we were blessed. You know, and I think the thing I'm most proud of and most grateful for is that most of the team is still intact. I mean, Leandro and Mora and Sabas Rivera and Johnny Garcia. I mean, we've got so many, been so blessed to have so many great horsemen around me, and we continue to move forward as we speak. So just very grateful for that.
You're always, Doug, very quick to credit your team, and it does take a village to get to this point. There's no doubt about it, but look, you're the man steering the ship. You're making the ultimate calls. You're the one who brought everybody together. And there has to be a sense of pride on your part when you step back and you look at all the things that you and the team have been able to accomplish. It has to be, I can imagine, even somewhat overwhelming at times.
It's it's really something that I dreamt about doing when I first started off with Jude Feld. Put the shank in my hand, and I started hot walking for him in 1986, and something that I just dreamt of being able to manage a stable, and never really dreamt or thought it was possible to have a stable the size that we were able to put together. And that's just it's a wonderful blessing, and then you get days like today with the Haskell and horse like Hot Rod Charlie, it just you pinch yourself that you're in these situations, and you're fortunate enough to be connected to a great horse like Hot Rod Charlie.
Yeah, speaking of Hot Rod Charlie, riddle me this, Batman, because I am also a Hall of Fame nominated trainer, right? So I can ask you this question. His first three starts, not good. Fourth, third, fifth. There were circumstances involved there with turf and sprints and all that kind of stuff. They all three came without blinkers on. You added blinkers last October at Santa Anita. He breaks his maiden. He goes on to finish second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, third in the Robert B. Lewis, win the Louisiana Derby, third in the Kentucky Derby, second in the Belmont, all with blinkers. The blinkers come off today. How come?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a chancy move because, like you say, he's really in top form. His numbers are all heading the right way. And, you know, what are we thinking about here with taking the blinkers off? But, I think when you go back to his first few races, we didn't have him on because he never really seemed to need them early on. And then here he was, I think he was like favored in all three of those races without him. And he was getting beat, but not tired. And we were like, what is going on? And he kind of struggled separating himself from the pack, if you will. So we added the blinkers, definitely helped. And now, he's just a much more mature horse, mentally and physically, of course. And now we're seeing him with the blinkers off, separating himself from his workmate and from packs of horses. So he's just really seems to be enjoying it. And we're hoping the more natural blinkerless Charlie, we're going to see his natural competitive spirits, reach their heights without the blinkers. But, it's going to be interesting. He's been working great without him, so now we got to see if today it works.
It's interesting. You bring up the fact that he was favored in each of those first three starts, all three of them being losses. And then since then, he's gone on to win a grade two and be classic placed. And, Doug, in all the starts since adding the blinkers, he hasn't been favored one time. That's incredible to me.
It really is. And now here we are, four back favorite today. So, I think as these waters continue to get deep, you just got to have some versatility. And he does seem like Flavian will be have more options, if you will, without the blinkers. So, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be very confident if we run the race that I hope we run, that it was a great decision. But I'll wait till see him compete before I get too strong on it at this point.
Michael McCarthy was on the show with me last Saturday morning. We were talking about Preakness winner Rombauer. And he said that he decided not to go to the Haskell and bide his time on the West Coast because of the fact that he feels Rombauer is a horse that can use a little bit of encouragement from the rider in his races. And because the jockeys can't use whips at Monmouth, he didn't think it was the right spot. No concerns like that with Hot Rod Charlie?
No, not at this point. But, I think that is another reason, though. I think not having the blinkers in this setting, I'm hoping will be a benefit. And you do, even the smallest of blinkers, you kind of take the vision away from the horse of the rider. So I think without that encouragement of the riding crop, that Charlie being able to see Flavian's hands and when Flavian calls on him to make his move, I think it'll be beneficial without the blinkers. So, it's interesting. I don't understand why they carry him if they can't use him, but that's a whole nother. We can talk about that on another show.
Yeah, yeah. Have you already sat down and mapped out a second half of the year plan for Hot Rod Charlie, or do you just take it one race at a time?
One race at a time, and that's the beauty of Greg Helm and Bill Strauss and my nephew Patrick, and they've been so patient. And it's one of those that we've kind of made a pact that until we run and see how he comes out of it, which usually within a week or two post race you kind of have an idea of how they're doing, we won't get too far ahead of ourselves until we get to those points of the journey. So we're so excited about today and optimistic we're gonna see a big effort and hope when he comes out of it in good shape and we got tons of options moving forward.
I had a chance to visit with your nephew Patrick on this show Belmont Morning, and it was so much fun to hear his enthusiasm and let him tell the story about his classmates, and that story's been well told. How much fun, Doug, have you had with Hot Rod Charlie going down this road, not just to the Kentucky Derby, but even through last year? How much fun has it been?
It's been an absolute incredible journey. And whenever you're lucky enough to have a horse like Hot Rod Charlie, you know, the journey is full of stress, you know, as far as trying to keep him injury free and moving forward. But it's also just, you know, jaw dropping, exciting to watch them compete. Even just watching them, you know, Hot Rod Charlie gallop, is you're just, you know, you feel like, wow, you know, when you see an equine athlete like this, that they don't come around very often. But yeah, it's been a great journey. And again, Patrick and Bill and Greg, you know, you've got, I think Greg said it the best, where, you know, you've got, you know, some guys that are on the rise, and in Patrick and his boys, and you got guys who are out golfing and enjoying their life, like Bill and Greg. So it's a great mix, and they complement each other, they respect each other, and it's just a lot of fun to be part of.
Your brother Dennis told me the story a while back before the Kentucky Derby about the fact that nobody wanted Hot Rod Charlie as a baby at the sales, and you have to look at what he's done now. You see the $1.6 million in earnings, and boy, the folks that passed on this son of Oxbow had to be kicking themselves a little bit, huh?
Yeah, well, and credit to Bob and Sean Feld. They were very instrumental into having Dennis look into him, you know, they had, well, Sean and Bob Feld have a great eye for young horses, and when they tipped Dennis on him and to look at him, and that was a great moment. I remember when Dennis called me and said he had bought a yearling, because that's really not Dennis's cup of tea, and I actually questioned it at the time, like, what are you doing buying a yearling? But you know, the rest is history. It's just been unbelievable excitement and just a blessing to be part of.
Visiting with trainer Doug O'Neill, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Doug, we talked about the fact that Hot Rod Charlie was favored in each of his first three career races. The betting public certainly knew he was special. How long did it take you to figure out that he could be this type of racehorse?
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, being a half to Mattoli, who's a champion sprinter, and I really thought we were going to see some brilliant stuff from him early on, one turning. And though he's a leggy colt, he's got a good stretch to him and good stride. You know, those kind, you're always hoping that you're going to get more out of them going two turns, but I wasn't really certain of that. And then, you know, with the addition of blinkers and two turns, it definitely opened up a whole new Hot Rod Charlie that, you know, we didn't know was there before his debut. But, yeah, he's always acted special, and I probably mismanaged him early on, not really thinking he was more of a one-turn horse. And actually, Greg Helm named him, and he named him Hot Rod Charlie because he thought he was going to be so fast. So he thought he was going to be a dynamite sprinter, and here we are, you know, coming off a second place in the Belmont. It's pretty amazing.
Trainer Doug O'Neill here on HRN. Doug, I'll let you go. I know it's a busy morning. One last question. I mentioned the fact that you were nominated to the Hall of Fame this year, and I know that somewhere out there there's a jacket waiting to be put on and a Hall of Fame bust of yours and a plaque waiting in Saratoga Springs. Mm-hmm. 2,576 career winners. How cool is it just to see your name on that list this year?
No, yeah. I mean, it's one of those where I don't think they could probably list all the names of the people that that have been a huge part of me even being talked about there, because like we talked earlier in this conversation, it's such a team effort from every owner that I've been so blessed to train for, and all the grooms and hot walkers and everything. So if that moment ever comes, it, they better enlarge the stage, because there's going to be a lot of us up there.
Dude, you know, I mentioned the bust like they do with the NFL. Do they actually, I know they do a plaque in Saratoga. Do they do a bust?
I don't know if they're going to have enough material for my big fat head. I don't know. But it is just, I've been through that and through the museum up there, and it's just awesome to see all the men and women, great horsemen that have come before us, and to even think that that we're on a list is pretty cool. So it'd be fun.
Yeah, Doug, always a delight to catch up. You're always gracious when I text you and ask you to join me on the program. Thanks so much for the time, as always, and good luck in the Haskell and beyond.
That's good luck to you today. Thanks for having me.
Now let's do it. Doug O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic visit. Wow, what an incredible guy. And looking forward to seeing Hot Rod Charlie strut his stuff at Monmouth later today. Don't forget, by the way, talking about the road to the Breeders' Cup, that Breeders' Cup tickets are now on sale. You can buy them right now. They actually went on sale yesterday. You can go to BreedersCup.com to view all the seating options and to purchase your tickets for the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar. We will be there. Make sure you are too. I'll be back to wrap it up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victorious Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget, there's no better way to follow racing, breeding, industry news, and more with Bloodhorse. You can head over to bloodhorse.com and any of their platforms. It's the industry's go-to site, bloodhorse.com. You can check out the new Bloodhorse Plus, behind-the-scenes exclusive videos, detailed stakes section, and plenty more, and the Bloodhorse Daily app, which is updated throughout the day with news, race results, and more. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily, and don't forget about Bloodhorse Magazine and their social media. You can follow Bloodhorse on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. No one covers thoroughbred racing, breeding, and our sport like Bloodhorse. For more than 100 years, it's been Bloodhorse. Well, my thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible. Kicked off with Larry Colmus. Byron King was here from the Bloodhorse. Jill Byrne from Colonial Downs. Boyd Browning from Fasig Tipton. And just a short time ago, trainer Doug O'Neill going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. And, of course, Mike Luzzi with Sean Clancy for our In the Room segment. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. Follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for all of you for tuning in here today, thank you so much for being with me, and thanks for participating in the poll question. And for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, and of course, go Steelers!